Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker.
Into the end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown.
And he's got it at the 10-yard line.
Touchdown. Touchdown. Touchdown, Buffalo. The Bills win it in overtime.
Hello there. Welcome. One Bills Live, presented by Collada Health. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, coming to you from Orchard Park, home of the Bills. Home of the Buffalo Bills, New Era Field, right across the parking lot. We're in the front side of the Ed Pro Sports Training Center in our One Buffalo studio. Good afternoon, everybody. John Murphy, Steve Tasker is here, co-host, ready to co-host.
Hi, Murph.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's good.
Are
it's
you
a rainy
awesome,
day. Yeah, it's a rainy day. I can't golf anyway. I'm happy to be inside.
Happy to be inside, warm and dry.
Spend some time
ready
with you, warm and dry. Yeah. Got that thing. We were right on it yesterday. We talked all day about the gambling thing and stuff. And, you know, now that I get to watch sports TV for fun, I mean for work, instead of for fun, I watch it all the time. Everybody's talking about it.
Yeah, it was big. It is big.
It
we'll
is
talk
big,
a lot about it some more today.
Yeah.
It's big because, and I have to say, let me start off by saying this, Steve. I feel like after reading about it again last night and early this morning, I have changed my mind a little bit. I don't think it's necessarily going to be a horrible thing for the way people watch sports, the way people watch the NFL. I don't think things will be that dramatically different. I've thought about it.
And
just after reading some pretty good pieces by people who point out that gambling is very prevalent now, that it will help the leagues, all of them, I think, in terms of television ratings and maybe some extra revenue coming from gambling. And I just think it's not going to change that much. Yesterday, 24 hours ago on the show, I was like, oh, no. And I don't want to be that moralist, that guy who's, you know, always says, well, that's just wrong. Because I don't feel that way about gambling.
Right.
I really don't. I don't think gambling – I don't think it's great. I know people can get addicted to gambling, but you can get addicted to alcohol. You can get addicted to drugs. You can get addicted to other things as well. And like most of those things, gambling should be controlled and should be monitored by the people. You should have an opportunity to do it. Yes, I'm not afraid to say that my position yesterday has altered. I've altered my position.
And I'm not too proud to say, you know, I listen to a lot of people too, and I got a lot of people in this business that I respect, and they were all saying, you know, a couple of people, what's going to happen is it's going to be a huge boost in attention to the leagues and how it's going. People are going to be interested in all the games, not just the games of their teams. It really is going to be interesting. And two, I know that there's a downside to gambling. You're sticking your head in the sand to say that it doesn't alter some people's lives in an adverse way. But you know, I was talking to my wife about it, and I said, well, you know, you're talking. She goes, I don't, you know, she is bad because people get addicted to gambling, and then it's bad. And I said, well, you know, so you want them to stop selling beer too because they're alcoholics at the games.
Right.
So you want to stop, you know, you're talking about like the local bar owners, and we know a couple, you know, that they're good guys and friends of ours that, you know, have a establishment where people go in. It's the same, and I equate it like that. I don't know if that's correct or not, but that's just the
Me
way
too.
I equate it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that one's exactly like the other, but, you know, it's something that I think is safer when you put it in the hands of experts who can administer it. And I think the league is probably headed down. I know they fought it. Well, listen, in our life, you're in my lifetime, Murph. I mean, it's been taboo for the NFL to even talk about it. Now they have no choice. They've been backed into a corner, and with the lawsuit that was won by the state of New Jersey yesterday, the Supreme Court overwhelmingly, 7-2, said, hey, listen, we're leaving it up to the states. And I think that's the big thing. I don't know what New York's going to do. I don't know what New York State's going to do. I don't know what – and they say that obviously New Jersey has been perched on the top of the slippery slide, ready to go down as soon as this thing came, as soon as the decision was made. Delaware has been a state that also said that they had – legislation in place that was going to take effect pretty quickly. And then there's a place you can go where every state is mapped out, and there's a bunch, it's like 32 states have legislation that is in place, ready to be passed. It's in place in the floor, ready to be passed when this decision came down. So it'll be pretty fascinating to see, because you got 32 teams, and most of them are in, there's probably, 28 different states. It's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out. But that was a big issue for us yesterday. We'll probably talk about it a little more today. But you know, everybody's starting to chime in on it.
It's big.
I think it's a huge issue.
Well, I think it's going to change. I think it's going to be a significant change. And I was talking to some radio guys yesterday afternoon, and we all agreed. it'll change sports talk radio, the way we and others approach these games and all games. Like, you know, you think that the betting line is going to be a major point of emphasis, right? There's a quote that I came across from Jeff Freeman, who's the CEO of the American Gaming Association. In other words, he's with the casinos, with the gamblers, right? But his quote, I thought, kind of summarized a different way to look at this and maybe the most sane way to look at this. The decision is a victory for the millions of Americans who seek to bet on sports in a safe and regulated manner. It makes it possible for states and sovereign tribal nations to give Americans what they want, an open, transparent, and responsible market for sports betting. So sports betting up until now has, other than Nevada, has been, you know, the province of let's face it, bookies, you know, shady people.
Right.
People who extend credit and really make their money, sometimes it seems to me, kind of squeezing people for the credit they extend. The Gaming Association goes on to say, through smart, efficient regulation, this new market will protect consumers, preserve the integrity of the games we love, empower law enforcement to fight illegal gambling, and generate new revenue for states, sports bodies, broadcasters, and many others.
All right.
I think all of that's true. All of that is true.
I mean, that's, you know,
it's
what?
It's regulated. It sounds
great, but you know there's going to be instances where it's not going to be all that. You know, there's going to be times when it's not going to be pretty to look at. There's going to be times when, but you know what? That's the way it is now.
Well, some,
that's the thing you forget.
And what the court ruled yesterday was not really, as somebody pointed out, I think Andrew Brandt said, that wasn't a decision on gambling. It was a decision on what is the province of the states. So, in other words, the Supreme Court said, look, you figure out gambling. This is a state issue, not a federal issue. Now, the NFL immediately came out and said, we need Congress to promulgate some federal standards.
We want it to be a federal issue.
Well, they want standards.
That's
because you've got to believe that if you're smart, as NFL owners are, as other sports owners are, you want to control it. You want to make the money. And that's where you get to, yes, it's going to be legal maybe soon in some places, Jersey and maybe New York. But what really is down the road somewhere, and maybe not too far down the road, is apps, right, on your phone. The NFL gambling app, right? Can't you see that? Like, here, bet on this. You know, they want to do it nationally. They want to have a national standard for gambling. You would think the leagues do, the NFL included, so that they can control it. They can get a chunk of the money, and they don't have to. And if they don't, now, you know, what? Casinos and sports books will make money off the NFL product, and certainly the NFL
wants everything
they
do.
Yeah, they want a cut. All the leagues want to cut, right? They want their, what do they call them, integrity fee.
Yeah, and plus you got a thing, too, where the NFL can say, listen, you're not going to – you can gamble on us, that's fine, but we're going to have a sponsored corporate partner like Harrah's or some, one of the big-name casino branches or industry leaders. They can partner and be an exclusive partner with the NFL, and they could offer things that other gaming sites don't. So they would, you know, get a lion's share, and the league would make tons of money off of it. You can get, and what just occurred to me too, and I don't know if that, and it'll be up to each state to decide what happens. This, Murph, you could make it like a fantasy league too, where you don't gamble with anybody except your buddies. For a fee, you go in and you have a fantasy league or a gambling league with just your buddies, and the money is all stays in one loop, that kind of thing, where you have prize money and that kind of thing. That's what happens now, right? Your buddy, instead of betting money, they bet tattoos, right? The loser has to get a tattoo, right? That kind of thing. So this opens it up to, I would think, like you could have leagues and contests. I mean, there's just no end to the amount of wagering that you can dream up. I mean, I play golf, and one of the main things stays about golf. I have a book that my mother-in-law gave me that's 3/4 inch thick, and all it is golf games.
Yeah.
How you wager on the tee boxes and who with who and teams and different sets. It's.
Do you use it?
I lost it. I can't find it.
I don't need it anymore.
page 32. Yeah.
No, so, but here's the, and Will Brinson wrote a great long-form piece on this on CBS Sports, in which he says this, and this is where I'm talking long form. Yes, certain states are ready to go now, but down the line, he writes, Will Brinson writes, I would fully expect the sports leagues, including the NFL, to take a long form approach to this, though at some point it would not be surprising at all if the NFL or NBA or Major League Baseball created its own gambling app, serving as the house and taking wagers from fans, customers, patrons, whatever. Won't happen now because it's not legal in enough states, but soon it will be. And now all of a sudden, you know, you go to a Bills Jets game and you go to the, you know, you have your phone, you go to the app, the NFL gambling app, and you put in $200 and you bet on you know, when's the first score and who's going to score the first score and how many first downs.
Murph,
and
Murph, you know what's going to happen now. How ironic is it now, because it's not legal in enough states, that the NFL, you can bet this is going to happen. The NFL is going to go to the states where they have franchises in and now lobby to let them run their gaming app in that state. Now they're going to be lobbying for gambling and let them be the guys to do it. They're going to be the lead dog in that fight.
Yeah, and there's been no shortage of people over the last 24 hours pointing out that fact, you know, the incongruous fact that they were fighting it in court, and now they're probably going to jump on board pretty quickly. A lot of people. Yeah, but you know, here's the thing. It's changed. The law is going to be out there now, and it will change in state by state on a regular basis. I believe, I won't speak for Steve, that it's going to change the way we cover sports, the way we talk about sports, and the way people follow sports and what they're looking for. I don't have a moralistic issue with it. I mean, like I said, gambling, drinking, smoking marijuana, smoking cigarettes, fine, I guess, you know, but I think people have to police themselves. But I do have an issue with how I think the games will be perceived and how the games will be followed. Not to the point where I would outlaw gambling, but just I think it's not going to be a good change, Steve, when it comes to the way people respond to sports. In other words, when people start rooting for things other than who wins and loses, I think that's to the detriment of the game. But who cares what I think, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a loss of the purity of why we get into it. And is it going to turn into what it's like at the horse track? You know, is it going to turn into a little bit. Like at the dog track?
A little bit.
I think it probably will.
Yeah.
And you know what? A game like a major league game, a team sport like Major League Baseball, the NFL, NBA, NHL, those sports are going to be much easier to keep the lid on with their integrity, with what goes on. But there's probably some sports that's not that way. I mean, because sports is sports. You're going to have guys get betting on golf, tennis, NASCAR. There is no – and, of course, the big question is what's the NCAA going to do with college betting?
Yeah. I read some things this morning. This is what got me thinking about it. Some schools, Ole Miss, Mississippi, have already started to plan for this, set up getting ready to hire people to police it. A lot of the NCAA schools are looking at the integrity fee coming from the casinos and whomever else, so that they can hire some people to make sure that the athletes and the coaches are fully instructed on what to look out for. It's not as if they snuck up on the NCAA. And the NCAA is as much of a money grubber, and all those schools, not just the NCAA, all those schools, they will squeeze every nickel out just like every NFL, NBA team.
And at a time
they're all about money, too.
Right, and they've got a huge commission now headed by Condoleezza Rice, who's looking at the NCAA trying to figure out the rules. That's a mud hole right now.
Yeah, I mean, and there's not a whole – I've read about that a lot, too, and there's not a whole lot of commitment on the part of anybody to adopt what they've talked about. You know, it's just like, nice report, thank you, we're moving on with our business.
Right.
That's the NCAA for you.
Yeah.
At any rate, we got a good show, and we will talk more about this. We want to know from you what our Twitter poll today, what will be the biggest change on how you consume the National Football League now that gambling is legal or will be legal? Give us a call, 803-0550, or toll-free, 1-888-552-550, or vote in our Twitter poll at One Bills Live. On the Twitter poll right now, 57% of you say this won't change your approach at all. No change. I don't gamble. Okay. 27% of you say, I may give gambling a try now that it's going to be legal. 16% say, I gamble. I'm going to gamble more. I'm going to watch more. Let us know what you think. We'd love to talk to you about it on the phone, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-552-550. It's that 27% that's interesting, Steve, and that,
so,
to me,
too,
is where the change will occur. All these people who never would have thought about gambling on the Bills or anybody else before when it was illegal, I can't do that, it's illegal. Now they'll say, well, I can go to a sports book somewhere and grab a beer, watch a game, and put down $5 on the winner, the loser, the first downs.
And you mentioned, too, it's interesting, the information that you're going to want out of sports talk radio like ours and websites, and it's really going to change the tenor of what they provide. Right now you get stories about guys' moms and their families and their long, bumpy road to the National Football League and the kind of guys they are. I don't know that that'll be as prevalent as it has been in the past. That's an interesting thought. I don't, you know, we can't see the end of this. I mean, I don't know exactly where it's going to go, but it's certainly interesting to think about at this point, after 24 hours after things have changed dramatically. We'll see, though. But you're right, Murph. The interesting thing about that Twitter poll is the 27% of people say, you know, I might give that a try. And it'll all come down to how easy is it and how much they think they know.
Yeah.
It's like it always is.
Yeah. Just the fact that it's legal now, I think, brings a whole new market into it, right?
Yeah.
A whole new market into the gambling side. Is that a positive development for these leagues, for these sports? I don't think so. It will enhance revenue. Yes, it will enhance some interest. Absolutely. The TV ratings will probably be better for all sports because people will have a stake in the game now. But is it going to be better?
Yeah, I think the big contest is going to be you're going to buy your season tickets for whatever they are, grand or whatever it is, and you're going to try and win it back.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the goal of the season.
Yeah.
You know, through enough bets and this, getting it right and knowing what you know about your team, you're going to try and win your season ticket money back. You know?
Yeah.
That's a starting point.
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely limitless. And you're going to hear story after story about people, you know, coming up with different ways of doing it, handicapping, and you're going to have – my email is going to get inundated with guys who say they can predict what games are going to win.
Yeah.
I'm going to get 4,000 advertisements about, I have gone 7 of 9 this last weekend in the NFL, and I'm like, oh.
The search for insider information will also be greater, I think. If more people are gambling, there'll be a bigger demand for insider information, injury information.
Yes. Tactics,
yes.
Game plans, practice schedules, short weeks. Everything will go into the hopper, and it'll be more scrutinized because people have more reason to worry about it or take part in it. So, yeah, you're right. That's an enormous. It's going to be an enormous change, I think, for people in our industry.
Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-552-550. What's the biggest change on how you'll consume the NFL once gambling becomes legal? Sean McDermott's going to join us in about 15 minutes or so, the head coach of the Buffalo Bills, as he is deep into the second day of this week's round of off-season conditioning program. They've got the rookies and the veterans together now. Coming up at 1 o'clock, or in the 1 o'clock hour anyway, one of the all-time favorite Buffalo Bills, London Fletcher, joins us from his home in Charlotte, North Carolina. We'll talk to him about a variety of topics. He's also a talent. He's on the air now on CBS, and what do they call it, that other pregame show? On
Tops, CBS, that other pregame show.
CBS Sports Network.
CBS Sports Network. They have a lot of fun on that. Adam Schein's on that, along with London Fletcher and some guys. It's a fun show, and it goes on for like 3.5-4 hours in the mornings.
Sunday mornings. We'll talk with London about some of the draft issues, some of the other things he's been up to. In the meantime, we'll take your calls at 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-552-550, and get to the tweet sheet about this issue. The biggest change on how you'll consume the NFL once gambling is legal, a tweet from Bills Cave Dave. I wonder if they'll have betting windows at the stadiums to place a bet before you go to your seat. You might. It will be like a racetrack, right? Especially if the teams get involved with, you know.
If the NFL starts running on their own without help from outside organizations, you can bet, depending on what state you're in, yeah. Absolutely. They'll start building buildings right around the stadium. They'll start having, you know, windows next to the hat store.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Exactly. Why wouldn't you?
But the future of this, I think, betting is this, right? Your phone.
Yeah.
People can don't even have to get up and go to a window. You can sit at your seat, and I'm talking maybe a year or two down the way, sit at your seat and make the bet that you want to make on the game that you're watching or any other game going on in the NFL that you keep an eye on via the TV screens, the video screens. That's the future, but sure, I can see why they would have betting windows.
And then there'll be, you know, we were laughing about it yesterday. Man, the stadiums, you want to get them to fix their Wi-Fi so that people can bet?
Yeah.
That you'll have all the Wi-Fi you need, and it'll be free.
Especially if they're making money on it.
If they're making money on it, they will make sure their Wi-Fi, your phone is working really good in the stadium.
What else you got on the tweet sheet?
Tweet sheet from Brian Cook. The change really won't make much difference. Those that really wanted to gamble already were finding ways to do so. The real effect will come when the sports leagues find a way to get their cut. What will that look like if this – and I think that's interesting because obviously – I say obviously. I don't know. The league is going to make it illegal for players, coaches, staff members, all the – none of – nobody – we can't bet.
Right.
You're not going to be able to do that. And they're going to – it'll be interesting to see what happens to the money. Obviously, the NFL Players Association will demand that it is at the very least part of the cap. And at the very least, I would say – and I was thinking about this yesterday, you know, these integrity fees, those should go straight to the players. They're the ones whose integrity you got to mind, correct?
Yeah. Although I wonder, I mean, who knows?
Players and coaches.
To me, the integrity fee is just a name for a cash grab by all these leagues, right? And the NCAA, right?
That's what.
But
it is
they're
to
talking
begin with.
About some of these schools, and the NCAA people are talking about. Well, we will hire experts who will educate our players and coaches on how to avoid conflicts of interest. Okay, right. Maybe you will, but I just think it's a cash grab. It's just going to go into the general fund, but. The effect will come when sports leagues find a way to get their cut. And I don't know
how that affects.
Right. I wonder what he sees there. So the sports leagues maybe get their cut as soon as it starts. Maybe they don't. But what will that effect be when the sports leagues get their cut? I can't think through that.
I don't know what changes you're talking about.
The NFL starts taking, you know, half of 1% off the gambling fee.
The only change I could see happening right away is you would bet that every stadium would start doing some renovations to add windows and infrastructure to handle that traffic. And whatever that traffic is, whether it's huge or small, would change the way, you know, you use the stadium and the way people move around and all of that. It's interesting, and here's from Minicamp Jack, another tweet. I'm not a gambler, but now that it's legal, I'd make an occasional bet, i.e. the Bills/Sabres, et cetera, to make the playoffs or win a championship. But I wouldn't get into betting on single games or in-game prop bets. Not for me. Gambling will drive more fan interest, which only helps ratings. that little dip they had in percentage ratings last year because – it seems to me like that may go away.
Yeah.
Although, like I told you, most television, from what I understand and the data I've been shown, ratings were down everywhere because they're watching other places. They're watching on the internet. They're watching on their phones. And all that goes into a different rating system. So people are still watching as much TV, maybe even more TV than they ever have. But it's so many different outlets that it shows up as a drop in the regular television ratings. I don't know if that's actually true, but there's a lot of people who believe that.
Let's take a phone call on this issue. How the biggest change on how you consume the NFL once gambling becomes legal. Let's go to Steve in Depew. Steve, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Yeah, I was just curious. Nobody's mentioned anything about New York State and how much they're going to tax winnings. To be honest with you, if they're going to tax the winnings like they tax everything else, why would anybody opt into a legal book when they can go to an illegal book and not have to worry about it?
Well, the reason they would do it is because it's legal, right? Some people don't want to break the law.
People that gamble, whether it's legal or illegal. I agree with the gentleman before me that said whatever the text or whatever that came through about people that gamble are going to gamble.
I think what's happening, Steve, is that people who maybe don't gamble now will begin to gamble and say, I'm going to gamble now that it's legal. I wasn't comfortable breaking the law.
And also, Steve, there's another aspect to this. When you get people, a large percentage or even a noticeable percentage of people who gamble and are doing it illegally to escape the tax break, you can bet that those guys who are taking illegal bets are going to get cracked down on.
Especially if they're competing with the government.
If they're competing with the government for revenue, you can bet that the government will squash them.
That they made marijuana legal? Are they going to make marijuana legal? You mean like the drug dealers, they're going to crack down on them?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, too, because if it becomes legal, there's a ton of people who – listen, you don't want that – if you're a regular, everyday person, you don't want that on your record. And if you're going to get cracked down on it, do it legally. You're not going to – where you can just do your own thing. I mean, there's people who don't want that headache in their life.
Generally speaking, nowadays, you don't really get any type of arrest if they find you with marijuana unless you have, like, 6 pounds in your trunk.
Right.
If you have a bag of, you know, 10 joints, they're going to just, you know, grab it, probably smoke it themselves.
Steve, that's not true if you're in a state with legalized marijuana. If you don't have the right to have marijuana and you've got it, you're in trouble. because you're competing with the state and their revenues. So if you're talking about New York or whatever, where it's not legal, you may be right. There probably isn't an arrest. But when it is legal and they can get that, all it has to do is have the governor of the state call out to the attorney general and say, listen, start cracking down on those people, and it'll go away in a heartbeat. You'll get arrest for a half a joint. I mean, that's the way it's going to work. And it's the way it's going to work with this with the legalized gambling as well. But you're right. The crux of the problem that you're bringing up, Steve, is the taxation. No doubt that's going to happen.
I mean, to be honest with you, if they want tax, whatever, say, you know, I mean, it's not going to be like lottery where they take 35% to 40%.
It might be.
If they take 5% or whatever, I'd rather see that 5% go to like the retired football players fund or whatever.
I got you.
Yeah, me too. Steve, you're right, thanks. Steve. That's great. That's a good call too, because there will be a lot, you know, I mean, I don't want to be cynical. But when that money starts, if it starts coming in, and it's all of that money that we've all, you know, we all envision, it's going to be dozens and hundreds of millions of dollars coming in just in New York State alone. You can bet that they're not going to have any problem spending it.
And, you know, Steve is right about the government aspect. And I was just thinking of my own experience, Steve. As you know, I went to OTB a couple weeks ago, bet on the Derby.
Yeah, yeah.
Hit the trifecta. It paid for a $1 bet. It paid at OTB. It paid like $135, $136. At the track, it paid $8 more. So that I'd lost eight. So I bet a $2 bet, $16, because I bet at OTB as opposed to being at Churchill Downs.
That's like eight. What? It's like 12% of your bet.
Yeah. And so he's right. There'll be you know, they take it. They
but
take
are you willing
out.
To do that because of the convenience of just
yes,
you're right.
I mean, yes, I am. Yeah, and legality. I don't feel like calling a guy, you know. Yeah. I don't want – it's not me.
I don't either. I don't want to do that.
I don't want to break the law if I mean, avoid it.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. There,
I might go 38 guys. Miles an hour through Orchard Park.
Instead of 35, right? Yeah. I get that too, yeah. But you're right. I mean, this, it's there's no doubt that that there's going to be some revenue generated because of this. And what they do with the revenue is going to be an issue, no question. Who's going to get the revenue and how they disperse it? You know, that's all down the road. Right now, I think the most important issue is what each state is going to do, and are they going to be similar or different?
And what the leagues will do is important.
And what the leagues will do.
A call here from Greg in Lockport. Greg, go ahead. You're on the air.
So, hi, guys. So currently now when you place a bet with a bookie, They charge what they call a VIG, or a vigorish.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a fee to place a bet with them. Typically, it's 10%. And all that's going to happen is the state starts grabbing money away from a legitimate bookie or a not legitimate bookie, and he starts losing money. All he's going to do is charge a larger vigorish, and he's going to pass it on to the consumer or the bet maker, the person betting. That's just basic top-down economics, and that's what's going to happen.
Well, here's the thing. The VIG won't change on a government-regulated gaming thing. If they keep lose, that illegal guys can do whatever they want. They can raise it lower. They can charge you whatever they want. They don't have to take – but there'll be a law in place that says, listen, just because you're losing money, you're not taking – you're not, you know, doing that. You got to make better. You got to get your odds better, or you got to make, you know, different prop bets. It's going to be on the gaming industry not to do that. It's not going to be on the gaming industry. Won't be able to fluctuate their fees like that. I imagine. I don't think they do that at the major sports books, because the major sports books don't lose. They're not like regular guy, the guy on the street corner who just takes bets whether he's thought about them or not.
Go ahead, Greg.
Go ahead, Greg.
Gone. Let's get one more call. Buzz calling from California. Buzz, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? I'm in Buffalo, actually, right now. But
it says Cali.
I did live in California for a while, and for 10 years. And
well,
I have a medical marijuana card in California, and I use it for back pain. And I got a couple friends that grow out there, and it's legal. You can grow 33 plants per person.
Mm-hmm.
You could also, like, have me say I don't have property and whatever. And there's all this tying into the gambling. You can grow in California, and it's legal. You can grow a couple, 100 plants if you have enough people living on the property. But the people in California that were doing that, they would actually drive it all over the country, though, illegally, and then sell it and make tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars of money, and not pay any tax on it. And that's what I always had the big issue with. I mean, the government's way behind on gambling and marijuana in that if you want to take the evil element out of it, if you want to put all the drug dealers out of business, you make it legal, and then the government runs it, and they get all the profits, and then maybe they can do something good with the tax revenue from it, with the revenue from it. You know, the marijuana and gambling are both in the same vein. The reason that I think that you don't see currently illegal drugs legalized is because then you'd have to – the war on drugs would end, and you'd have to put all these police officers and judges and attorneys, they'd all lose out. And that's why it doesn't happen. That's the hypocrisy of it all. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Buzz. That's an interesting thought. I think you're onto something when you talk about the correlation between the marijuana and it gradually being legalized around the country and gambling now, which is going down that road. I think there's a lot of similarities there. I got to think about that, whether it's better if the government totally control it or not. Gambling, I'm talking about. I don't know. I see what you mean. Obviously, teams, leagues, casinos, betting parlors are going to fight over this because there's millions and millions of dollars at stake. I don't know which entity will be right. The best one for it to wind up. I haven't thought
and
of it that
hasn't.
Far yet.
And here's the thing, and one of the reasons you think, one of our regular tweeters, Brian Rosignol, said, hey, the biggest change so far is that we don't talk about the Bills anymore. We're only talking about this game. It's the issue of the day in the NFL. No question about it. It may subside pretty soon. In fact, it will subside in about a couple of minutes because Sean McDermott's coming on the show.
He's not going to talk about gambling.
Yeah, we're not talking about gambling with him. But there's a lot of wrinkles that got to be ironed out about this. We don't know what it's even going to be like in New York State for us here in Buffalo and around the country. I think the crux of it is at this point, the way it looks, it can be different in every NFL city, and it will be different in every NFL state. You know, where there's a team, and I think that's what nobody knows is what it's going to look like, and certainly that's. That's the intriguing part of this entire scenario.
That's why it's fun to talk about.
Yeah, it is kind of fun because you can dream up all kinds of good stuff.
Hey, the Bills are looking for a kid reporter, and you've got until the end of this week to apply. Kids ages 7 to 13 to cover the Bills in the upcoming season from training camp right through to the last home game and everything in between. If you think you or your child has what it takes to ask the tough questions and be the Bills' official kid reporter, submit a video, and we'll get you in here for an interview. The deadline for submissions is this Friday, and you can go to our website, buffalobills.com. The Buffalo Bills 2018 Kid Reporter. Looking for your applications right now at buffalobills.com. Sean McDermott standing by. He'll join us next. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Back on One Bills Live at One Bills Drive, Steve Tasker along with John Murphy. We're here in our studios outside the field house, and we are joined now by the head coach of the Buffalo Bills, Sean McDermott, who's neck deep in the OTAs. Congratulations on the way the season ended up last year. Thanks for coming back in with us. I know you're busy. Thanks for carving out a couple of minutes for us.
Appreciate it. I love being on the set with you guys. Good way to connect with our fans and good to take a break as well from what's going on inside
here. Every time I come into work and I go out, you know, we get in there right about the time you're in the heat of it on the practice field stuff, I am so glad I'm retired.
Why is that?
Oh, man, it's just all that hard work, man. Those guys, it's hard. I mean, we had Brandon Riley on yesterday. He goes, yeah, it's pretty – because yesterday was pretty intense. Yesterday and yesterday were pretty intense workouts, correct?
Guys are working hard. I mean, now's the time of year where you make a lot of gains. Eric Ciano, our strength coach, and his staff have done just a phenomenal job of really getting our guys to buy into the program in the off season. Our attendance has been outstanding as well, which is a little bit of a challenge. It's not easy to get here.
Sure.
Although I do see your face in the airport every time I go through, which is nice.
Take a selfie with me, send it to me. I do that every time. I got like 50 of them.
All right. Yeah. So So basically, yeah, it's good. The guys are working hard, like I said. We're putting in some, you know, new system on offense, and then a carryover second year now with on the defensive side and special teams as well. So
yeah, that's and we want to talk to you. We were talking and watching the rookie minicamp over the weekend and late last week. You had like 30 guys in that you were going to try that were trying out. I mean, you know,
right.
and you signed one, Zach Olstead, the fullback. And we got to talk. And he's the guy that made it. He's the guy that got a contract. What did he do? Did you have an injury that now you needed a fullback, an extra fullback, or was it Zach himself that's, you know, kind of caught your eye and said, well, we might have this guy?
Yeah, you know, a little bit of both, but really let's give credit where credit's due. And Zach, you know, really from the start caught our eye with the way he was on task from a mental standpoint, number one, and then also, you know, look, we're not in pads, so the passing game, what he was able to do out of the backfield in the one-on-one, the mirror drill, we had some – you know, mirrors going on with the offense, defense, mirroring one another there. So, you know, and then just his attention to detail, the way he carried himself throughout the weekend. And yes, we do need a fullback as well. We have one with Pat, and Pat does a phenomenal right. job. So, the role of special teams, you know, also comes into play. And it doesn't take long in most cases, really, to. When you're out on the field, just say, okay, that guy right there. And I think that was the case for the most part with Zach.
Coach, you had like a dozen undrafted free agents over the weekend, your draft picks. And now the last 2 days they mix in with the veterans. How much does their approach change? What do you see from those rookies over the last 2 days? And I know it's only conditioning work for the most part here, but do they look different? Do they look a little intimidated maybe when they're with the 35-year-old men out there?
Well, it's always interesting to watch how – okay, you're the big fish in the small pond coming from college, and that's true of wherever you play. Now you transition to the NFL, and your first introduction is, you know, you're kind of still the big man on campus because it's just rookies for the most part. And then, okay, we transition from Saturday, Sunday into Monday where we integrate the rookies with our current roster. And it's interesting to see who kind of shrinks into their shell a little bit, starts to ascend from a leadership standpoint, and we're seeing a little bit of both at this point, which is okay.
We're on One Bills Live talking to Sean McDermott, head coach of the Bills, and coach. You know, now you mentioned it a moment ago. You're installing a brand new offense, but this is your second year in your defense. I want to ask you about both sides of the ball. First of all, we're talking about Zach Olstead, the new fullback. Not every team carries a fullback. You guys, and with a new offensive coordinator, maybe that came up in conversation. Hey, are we going to have a fullback this year?
Right. Well, we had one last year with Pat, of course, and I would say about a quarter to a third of the teams probably carry a fullback currently in the NFL, and we're one of them. You know, I just – when you look at what's trending around the league, it's always good to try and stay out in front of things in terms of trends and whatnot. And, you know, I just know being a defensive – guy coming up through the ranks that defending a multiple personnel group type system, whether it's 11 personnel, which is three wide receivers, two tight ends, two wide receivers, you know, two wide receivers, a tight end, and two backs. I mean, that presents a little bit of a multidimensional or layered preparation for the week on the defensive side, which is what we want to do.
What kind of a fullback do you like? What's the most effective fullback that you like to see?
Well, I like Pat and Zach.
Right. Yeah. But what kind of
I mean, you know,
what
here's the thing. No, number one, you have to, just like most positions on our team, John, you've got to be trustworthy, knowing your assignment. You're the lead blocker in most cases in the two-back set for our halfback, and he's got to trust that you're going leading him in the right area. And then the ability to catch the ball out of the backfield, the ability to pick up blitzes, pressures, and then also to contribute on special teams. It's a speed game. It's a space game. So the days of the 260 pound fullback that was just leading up in there, and that's the only thing he did. That's not really what we're looking for. Some teams might be looking for that, but that's not the case with us.
Now talk about what's happening on the other side of the ball, and now you've got a defense that most of the guys, particularly the guys in the secondary for sure, are there. This is their second lap in this defense. We spoke to Micah Hyde. He said, wow, yeah, things are much different coming around. You can start to evolve the defense.
Right.
And now you also have a bunch of new guys up front, a whole reworked front seven. I mean, talk about you know, one side of the defense is kind of rolling along in their second year of this defense kind of going. Now you've got some guys that are trying to catch up. I mean, how's that coming together?
It's been you know, to this point, seamless. You know, credit to our coaching staff. They've done a great job. And we talk a lot as a staff about being aligned, being on the same page, using the same terminology, even across phases, so special teams to defense, that Coach Crossman is teaching tackling the same way we're teaching it on defense, or catching a football, we're teaching it the same way on offense as we teach it on defense, so that you know, what we're instructing the players to do when they move from one classroom to the next, it's not a whole new set of terminology. So, you know, our coaches have done a phenomenal job in buying into that and selling that to the players. As you mentioned, our defensive line, we believe in building it up front. You're only typically on defense as good as your defensive line. So we're going to go as they go, and we've got to do a better job this year of stopping the run, fitting the run, which takes all 11 guys, including our corners, and then obviously, you know, affecting the quarterback, pressuring the quarterback with our four-down rush.
Coach Sean McDermott in studio with us. Coach, got to ask you about Josh Allen, and I have a two-part question. You've had him now 4 days watching him throw the ball. How does he look throwing the ball? And number two, how's he doing in the classroom? How's he doing with the playbook, which is probably new to him as well?
Well, I'll start with the classroom first, because that's really where it starts for us, is the command of the offense. And we're seeing a young man that has taken the right approach through the weekend, rookie minicamp. You see the leadership. You see the intelligence. And then when we transitioned to the field, I thought he had great command of the offense, great command of the huddle, and then had two really good solid days you know, in terms of the way he threw the football. Most of it was passing game because of the nature of the camp. We didn't run the ball much. When we did, it was few and far between, but had a nice 2 days of camp.
I mentioned to Steve, I was here Saturday, and he asked me how he looked, and I said, you ever hear the term live arm? That's the sense I got from watching Josh Allen, just a live arm, ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to struggle to throw the ball in any type of condition. I don't think he's going to struggle to get the ball outside the numbers, right, which some quarterbacks do. So he does have a live arm, which is important. At the same time, there are other areas that are important as well, which I already mentioned, the leadership, the command of the huddle. It's a one day at a time process for him and all of us right now as we continue to stack quality days on top of one another as we move forward.
You know, one of the things I wanted to ask you is last year, I don't think very many people would dispute from where you started, say at this time last year, maybe in June last year before you went to training camp, and then you made trades and all the personnel moves at the end of training camp and with Marcell Dareus, and it's a roster that actually, on paper, got less talented, but on the field played so much better. Mm. How does that, you know, and that's all part of the deal. I mean, that's part of your culture. Now, how does that, when you, now you've got that kind of culture built, and now you seem to be bringing in outstanding football players as well. I mean, that's, I mean, you kind of feel kind of like, all right, we got it going in the right direction.
Yeah. And let's not make, let's not get off track. I love talented football players.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so we're not trying to do it with less talented football players. What we're trying to do is build a team. And what I mean when I say that is we're trying to build a team. When you combine guys that have good character, and they're gonna there's gonna be a range in there, but we can check the box
I'm on the other end of the range, Murray.
and then guys who have their chin over the bar from a talent standpoint, that right, there's not a fatal flaw. But they can get the job done from a skill set standpoint. You have a chance to have the type of team we're looking for that has the culture that leads to the chemistry. And you've heard me say that over and over again. I believe in building the team that way. Brandon and I are equally aligned that way in terms of that philosophy. So, you know, it's interesting because you look on the field now and there's a ton of new faces out there as opposed to a year ago. Are we where we need to be? No, absolutely not. But we're moving in that direction, and that's the encouraging part. And that's the part you're starting to see now where the guys are starting to build a team, where guys are starting to get to know one another, build the trust that's so important this time of year, and then feel a part of something bigger than just themselves.
Hey, Coach, I believe we're about a week away from the next phase of the offseason work, OTAs, organized team activity. What changes then next week when you get into the OTA?
Well, we're allowed to do, per NFL rule, a little bit more from a offense versus defense standpoint. You know, we're allowed, you know, to do some other things via NFL rules that we're not allowed to do this time of year. And that's all healthy. That's all part of the natural transition. And us, it also gives our strength and conditioning coaches and our coaches a chance to really just spend a lot of time in the classroom with them, spend a lot of time in the weight room, getting them stronger, getting them in shape. Our sports science department has really done a phenomenal job, as well as our training staff and Nate Bresky and his staff. And so watching those groups work together, the communication that has ensued over the course of the last 4 and 5 weeks through phase one and phase two and now into OTAs next week has been playoff caliber for us.
Are you guys using, even at this early stage, the next-gen stuff where you put sensors on the players, you know how hard they're working and what that is? I mean, is that all in place now? You use that even at this early stage?
Well, we do introduce some of that at this early stage, and we'll continue to ramp that up as we move forward. As you already heard me mention, our sports science department does a great job, one of the best around, and I use it. We use it.
Right.
And they're currently at work helping me build practice for next week in the first week of OTAs, making sure that we ramp guys up at the right pace, and we're monitoring them, you know, all the way through practice, even after practice. So it's state of the art.
Where does the roster stand right now? What's the roster limit? How many guys you have?
90 is the max right now.
Is it full, or do you have?
We're right at 90, okay. Right around 90, give or take.
And that's that always fluctuates from week to week. I mean, you have one or two guys go, and you say, like the rookies, there were 30 of them in here this week, and one of them stuck around, and it kind of continues to go that way. Correct?
Yeah, and you could look at it and say, you know, we always, Brandon and I always talk about the right 90. It doesn't have to be 90, but it's got to be the right 90. And, you know, there'll be times when we hang at 88, 89, if we don't feel like there's a guy out there that can help us right now that deserves to be in a camp or on a roster. One of my pet peeves is I don't want just camp guys. I don't want guys just to have guys. I mean, I probably would have been one of those guys, you know, back in the day, and I would have loved to have that chance, right? But we want guys that we feel like, A, fit into our team, and B, can help us moving forward.
Last question I have for you, Coach. I wonder how much and in what way your approach to this offseason work changed from your first year last year when you were first-year head coach to this year. What did you learn maybe from last year that made you alter things a little bit this year?
Oh, I mean, I try and learn every day, and I'm not a finished product. I go back. I'm going back through a lot of our process from last year and just situational football that just to name one area – but areas that I can get better at, that we can get better at as an overall team, managing the game. You know, there's always new things to look at, how we want to play the game, how the game's trending, the current state of the NFL in terms of new offensive schemes, new defensive schemes, special teams, you know, the same way. So I think that's probably the biggest area from a tactical standpoint that we can improve on is you know, the situational football, the game management, and taking advantage of the other team's weaknesses, our matchups. So, and our players being very aware of that, not only the coaches, but also our players as well.
One of the last thing I want to ask about right now, I want to ask your coaching staff when we're on the field and the players are in the building, things kind of change for them. But this new offense that you're installing, I mean, Brian Daboll, he comes in, he's got impeccable credentials. I mean, he just won a national championship at the lower at the NCAA level. He's been in the NFL for years and years. Can you give us a glimpse of what, as a defensive guy, what's going to be different about Buffalo's offense this year than what we saw last year? Is it going to come down to, hey, it's just got different players playing it?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that, A, you know, when you look at players now in the second year of just being around our building, so that'll be new. I think there's a comfort level with that. And sometimes comfortable is bad. In this case, I think comfort is good in this sense. But with respect to the new system, without giving away too much, I think you're going to see a system that takes advantage of situations and matchups where and when we can. And an offense that, you know, is a little bit more multidimensional as opposed to what we saw last year. You know, we'll get around to preseason where the fans will get to see that through training camp, and I can't wait to see the fans up at St. John Fisher. We're excited to be there. Not yet. There's a long time between now and then, and a lot of work to do. But I think they'll be pleased with where we are and what they see when they get up to training camp.
Coach, thanks for this. I know you're busy these days. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for taking a few minutes.
Oh, it's good to be with you guys. Anytime. I'm going to come, like I said before, I'm going to come and crash the set and maybe surprise you guys one of these days in the offseason.
Perfectly welcome to do that. Yeah. Absolutely. Coach Sean McDermott with us. It's One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, Sean McDermott just left us. Always interesting. He gets us – I'll tell you why he gets me excited, Steve. It's not just, you know, fanboy here with the pom-poms. He's so intelligent and so on point that he gets me going. I'm thinking, yes, he's thought of that. Yes, he's thought of that. His point about a couple of things. First of all, the sports science thing, which is relatively new, and they've sort of slowly brought it in. But they're really on the forefront here of pushing sports science into conditioning and the stuff they do. And his point about the offense, too, being more multidimensional, I think he said, which to me reads they're going to throw it more than they did last year, don't you think?
Well, yeah, exactly. And plus the fact that, you know, it's just not only has he thought about all this stuff, but, man, oh, man, they've got a plan and they're on it. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the real thing.
We're in the middle of
we're gonna have some sound bites that we're gonna revisit our interview with Sean McDermott just in, you know, throughout the rest of the show. But we're gonna talk about what he said. Some of it was really intriguing. But every time he comes in, we were laughing, and I told you during the break. Every time he comes in, man, I just find myself I'm such a rah-rah special teams guy, little helpy helperton guy. I just swill down the Kool-Aid,
yes,
man. He comes in, man, I am just guzzling it down. It is just so awesome.
And I'm trying to get you to temper that. It's May.
I know.
And I'm telling you, what gets me excited is not the Kool-Aid, but it's the fact that they have – I'm not going to say they've thought of everything, but you know what? They've got a lot of stuff covered here. It's May, and, yes, they've got 90 players working out here, and everything is sort of focused on the season. Now, that's the way it's supposed to happen, but I think we all know that's not always the way it's happened here and probably not the way it always happens all around the NFL. Some teams are, going through their off-season workouts, and some are doing it pretty intensely, like I believe they are here, and some are not.
Yeah, I mean, that's – they're all similar, but they're all unique as well. You know, they all kind of look the same, but they're all, you know, definitely unique because 32 different teams, they all look differently. They all have different people running them, and they have different philosophies. Some of them look very different.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, this feels like they've got 90 guys that are on board that are totally ready to do what it takes to build their team. And he still talks like that. Even last year, he said, you know, and we talked about the fact that last year they lost a lot of really talented guys and got better, even in the midst of that. Now, they replaced those talented guys with guys who were also pretty talented, but it's a team that played better with, on paper, less talented players. And that boils down to a couple of things, philosophy. And that coaching staff.
I'm glad you said coaching.
They got them coached up.
Coaching makes a difference.
They coached them up. And I'll tell you, we talked about it a bunch last year during the season. I'll just remind people of some of the stuff that happened last year during the season. Remember, they were playing, I believe it was the Oakland Raiders, the Oakland Raiders. And one of the receivers caught a little pass over the middle, twisted around, and spun out of a tackle and went out and got a third, picked up a third and 13 late in the game to extend a drive or to keep the game going or to keep possession and wind the clock down in a win. And Andrew Catalan for CBS was calling the game, and he thought there was a scuffle on the sidelines where the player went out of bounds.
Oh, yeah, I know where you're going. Yeah.
It wasn't a scuffle. It was
Tate, right? It was Brandon Tate.
Brandon Tate spun out. He came out on the Bills sideline about midfield almost, just past midfield, and it looked like there was a scuffle because everybody, all the guys on the sideline converged, and the MSG viewers are going to get this highlight now. The players on the sideline converged on him and enveloped him in just this huge celebration. And Andrew Catalan saw the quick move by the players, and he thought there was a scuffle. And it wasn't. It was the coaching staff, the players, the team. They all jumped on him, and they were all jumping around, and it looked like that, and it was just a celebration for how happy they were that Brandon Tate picked up that first down on a third and long in a spot where they had to have it. And just a guy, you know, he's in for like what? He probably caught, what, 10 balls all year. But man, oh man, were they happy for him. And it was just one of those things where, you know what, that's a different kind of attitude and a different team than we've seen in Buffalo in 17 years.
I can see why that gets you excited, Steve.
I every once in a while I revert to my, you know, what I used to be.
What?
You know, I was an emotional guy.
Yeah.
You know, I poured it all in, you know, to the game. And I ran hard, and I played hard, and I practiced hard because I loved all of it. And I tell people, I tell young kids now, if you're not doing something you love, and I loved everything, you got to. And I see it in these players out here. They love film study, they love meetings, they love lifting, they love being together on the practice field, they love watching film, they love practicing hard, they love eating right, they love everything about their job. When you can do that, you know, it translates into success. And that's, and that for me, that was actually just kind of hanging in the league for 13 years because yeah, if I didn't like some of the stuff I did, I wouldn't have been good enough to play, let alone be good.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, I revert to that every so often because that's why I was successful. And I, you know, you pour everything into it, and that's, and the result is something you see like on the sidelines of that Raider game. You get 53 guys doing that. Man, you're a tough out.
Yeah.
You're a tough out. And they were.
Wins. Maybe the difference between 9 wins and 7 wins, right?
Yeah. Kind of stuff. You think about it. I mean, yeah. And they went through a season when they were 5-2 in the first half of the season where they beat Atlanta, a Super Bowl team. They beat the Raiders, who were 12-4 the year before. They beat Tampa Bay, who was everybody's dark horse to get to deep in the playoffs, maybe get to the Super Bowl last year at the beginning of the year. Now, certainly didn't turn out that way. But they had turned the corner in Tampa Bay the year before, and the Bills beat all three of those teams. And I think that was nothing if not the effect of a culture change that carried them through in tough moments during those games. I mean, you know, the Tampa Bay game, Tyrod Taylor and that offense, they scored 10 points in the last 2 minutes to win that game. And that was something where I didn't think they had that in them. But certainly they did. And it was – so I'm – when you get Sean McDermott in here, I start to, you know – start to lose my mind because I am totally jumping in feet first in over my head, you know.
Well, just save it. I mean,
I'm like holding
away,
my breath.
We're
I'm
months
just
away from
sucking
camp,
it in.
Man,
it is awesome. I know
in,
we're in May,
June, July. Yeah, we're 2.5 months away from.
And
camp.
He does that too. He said, you know, listen, it's May. He goes, we're building the team. We're not supposed to be ready to play today.
No,
you know, and that's guys like me. Needed to hear that.
Yes,
you
do.
I'm not going to win a playoff game today.
Right. All right, we'll take a break so Steve can calm down a little bit. We're back with more in a moment. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Update from One Bills Drive from the Ed Pro Sports Training Center, where the Bills got in another day of their off-season conditioning program today. They are a week away from the start of organized team activity, OTAs, the next phase in the off-season workouts. Last night, Bills safety Micah Hyde found out that he's been named to the NFL's top 100 list on NFL Network. He is number 62 in between Cincinnati defensive tackle Geno Atkins at 63 and Rams defensive tackle Ndamukong Suh at 61. Micah Hyde coming off his standout year, first Pro Bowl bid last year, now on the NFL's top 100 list. Arizona Cardinals coach Steve Wilks says that Sam Bradford is our starter, despite the fact that they picked Josh Rosen with their first overall pick. He told NFL Network that Bradford is atop the depth chart, but Rosen can win the job. Colts quarterback Andrew Luck still rehabbing his throwing shoulder from the surgery he had in January of 2017. Colts GM Chris Ballard says the three-time Pro Bowler should be ready for training camp. Steelers minority owner David Tepper expected to sign the deal later today to buy the Carolina Panthers and keep them in Charlotte, North Carolina. The Panthers to be sold for $2.2 billion, setting a record for the highest sale price for an NFL team. Yesterday, the Supreme Court struck down the law that makes it illegal to bet on sports in states other than Nevada. As states move forward, the NFL's focus is on Washington. The league is looking for a federal law on gambling on sports. Stanley Cup hockey tonight. It is a game three of the Eastern Conference Finals. The Washington Capitals with a 2-0 edge over Tampa Bay, and the Caps are home tonight. 8 o'clock faceoff in Washington against the Lightning. And in the NBA playoffs tonight, the Boston Celtics home for game two of their Eastern Conference series, Eastern Conference Finals, against Cleveland. The Celtics hammered Cleveland on Sunday afternoon in game one. Last night, Golden State beat Houston 119-106 behind 37 points from Kevin Durant. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, ready for hour two. Moments away from London Fletcher, former Bills linebacker, now with CBS Sports Network and their other pregame show. We'll talk with London Fletcher in a couple of minutes. Want to hear from you on our Twitter poll. But before we get to that, Steve, any thoughts on the Carolina Panthers and the $2.2 billion price tag?
$2.2 billion.
$800 million more than what the Bills sold for, right? Just 4 years ago. The Bills were $1.4 billion.
Yep.
The Houston Rockets sold a couple of years ago for $2.2 billion. Carolina's worth $2.2 billion, that much more than the Buffalo Bills. Is that just time? Is that 5 years later? Or is that real value, do you think?
I mean, Charlotte's a big city. Listen, they probably break it down to the numbers, and then there's always probably the same percentage tacked on just to make sure you're the guy that gets it. But I don't know that there was a bidding war. We know here that here in Buffalo, there was a number of people who wanted to get their hands on this franchise, most of which wanted to move it and make it more valuable. There's always that element in these proceedings, but a guy who has already owned or been a minority owner in a franchise in the NFL, it's a pretty safe bet in the NFL. For those of you who don't know, at any given time, there is as many as 24 groups, investment groups or singular people who are approved to buy an NFL team. When those things happen, the team can the league approves these people, and they get vetted by the league. Say, this guy wants to be eligible to buy a franchise. So when a franchise comes up for sale, as the Carolina Panthers did, those people all go into the pool and say, who would like to buy them? And that's where the owners, that's where the new owner group comes from. And this minority owner, David Tepper from the Pittsburgh Steelers, is going to get the Panthers. And that's how that stuff works. You got to get approved to be even in the running to purchase the franchise. And there's no telling. He might have been approved 25 years ago.
Yeah. Well, minority owner of the Steelers, so there's got to be some. He's 60 years old. He's a
hedge fund manager.
Yeah, global hedge fund. Appaloosa Management. Net worth of $11 billion, according to Forbes.
Really?
He must put up at least 30% of the selling price. I'm getting a headache.
What's 30%? That's 300, 600 million. That's like
22 divided by 7.
That's like $700 million
on the table just to talk. All right. New owner of Carolina coming
Boom,
up.
Shock-a-lock.
We had Sean McDermott in studio with us last hour. Check. Maybe you want to talk about that, or you can talk about our Twitter poll today. And our Twitter poll, I think it's an interesting one, Steve, and it deals with sports gambling. We already dipped into this already. On the topic of gambling, though, how will the upcoming change in the law to allow gambling on sports, how will that change your the way you consume the NFL? What will be the biggest change on how you consume the National Football League once gambling is legal? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550, or vote in our Twitter poll. On the Twitter poll, looks like most of you are status quo. 57% say, I don't gamble now, so I won't change. 26% of you say, I may give gambling a try once it's legal. 17% say, I'm going to gamble more. I'm going to watch more. What do you think? Get back to us on that.
And also, we're talking about we're wrapping up the interview and all the things that Sean McDermott told us. He was on the show for quite a long segment, quite a few minutes, had a lot of really nice answers about what the offense is going to look like, how they're going about building their team, had a few things to say about Josh Allen and the rookie free agents, why the Buffalo Bills are one of the few franchises, not one of the few, but maybe one of the 8 franchises in the league that that carry a fullback, and what he said about that. And it came down to not what his offense looked like, but what his defense thought about that offense and how difficult it was to prepare for it. So we got a lot of sound bites that we're going to probably revisit for some of those as well. And also we got into, you know, how after he was gone, Murph and I were talking about, you know, whether coaching matters. We got a tweet from Chris Pearson who said, coaching matters. And Boston Celtics head coach Brad Stevens is making the Celtics great with less talented players who are coachable. And he said, just like head coach Sean McDermott is pursuing. That's there's a lot to be said for that. We made a comment just a few moments ago, right before the break, about, you know, how different the team looked last year than it did in the preceding years, not because of the talent on the field, but because they felt about each other and how happy they were to be on the football field. And you could tell by their body language. I mean, you remember Tre'Davious White in that snow game out dancing to the music in between plays and how much joy he had. He did the same thing all year when he was out there waiting for the ball to be snapped and they were in a TV break or something. Tre'Davious White is out there doing this happy dance. And you just got to love it. It makes you want to cheer for those guys. And it's fun to think about how them building yet another group just like that one.
Steve was talking last hour when Sean left about how pumped up he gets. A tweet from Tiffany Daniels who says, "I'm drinking the Kool-Aid too, Steve." "My son and I had the privilege of meeting Coach at the Speaker Series last week. Such a great experience. He's a special person. Not only a great coach, but an even greater person. Easy to root for him." I agree with that. Yeah, it's easy to root for him.
And we're getting tons of feedback on all this stuff on Twitter. People are listening and they want to know. But the Twitter poll is also interesting because there is a little bit of a change on the horizon. I think all of us acknowledge, even the people on our Twitter poll, the 56 or 57% of people who don't gamble at all and aren't going to change how they view the league at all, even then they've got to acknowledge that something's going to be different.
Yeah.
And at this point, we don't know what it's going to be. But it's interesting to find and to see now that as we look back, on the other side of this wall, as these players are practicing and doing stuff, this is a team last year. And I think I talked to you about this yesterday, about last year, before the season, at the end of preseason. This was going to be a team. I don't know how many games they were going to win, and ultimately they went to the playoffs. I said, but I do think it's going to be a team that's going to be easy to root for at the end of the season.
You said that last year. Yeah.
I said that right at the beginning of the season. And and it happened much faster than I thought. I mean, it was a fun team to watch and to root for. They were getting turnovers. They were going on the road and winning. And then you see them play and act, and you hear interviews with them. You see them interact with each other and their coaches. You hear their coaches talk about these young players they've got. And I'll tell you, Murph, we've been doing this for a couple of months now, talking about the draft and watching these young players come in. I can't tell you. I mean, you just want to adopt those, you just want to adopt this draft class. That's the kind of guys they've got. This, Josh Allen, Tremaine Edmonds, Harrison Phillips, and this, Wyatt Teller, who I had no idea who he was before he was drafted. And I've sat and chit-chatted with all of them. Man, oh, man, what great guys. It just gives you a lot of excitement about the kind of thing they're building.
Here's a call from Frank on the Thruway with thoughts on Sean McDermott. Frank, go ahead. You're on the air with us. Frank? On the Thruway, Frank? Sounds like he's there, doesn't
it? I hope Frank's okay. Frank?
Frank! Not there. Thanks for calling, Frank. Thanks for playing along at home.
He hung up and listened before we had who he wanted to listen to.
McDermott, the part about the fullback was pretty interesting, Steve, because I said him before we went on the air, I said, how many teams, we were talking about, they signed the fullback yesterday, the guy from the rookie tryout.
Yes.
How many teams do you think have fullbacks? And we kind of settled on maybe 10 have fullbacks. Right. And I asked him the question, what kind of fullback are you looking for? He said, I want Pat and the new guy. But really what I think he finally did answer the question when he talked about how the days of a bruising Roosevelt Leakes, 250, 260-pound bruising blocker who just –
Jim Braxton.
Yeah, Jim Braxton just clears a path. That's gone. I think in the NFL now, and especially when you do what McDermott talked about, challenging defenses with different personnel combinations, you need a fullback who's a threat in the passing game. You need a fullback who's a good blocker, both in the run and the pass protection. I mean, you need a good athletic fullback who can present a lot of options to the opposing defense. And it's interesting that McDermott, defense coach that he is, that's the way he looks at it, right?
Yeah.
He looks at who creates the most problems for us. How many different formations do we have to get ready for, rep during the course of a week?
It's about making it difficult for your team or your opponent to prepare for your team. And having a fullback on the roster that is in the game on a number of occasions on a given percentage of plays, the other team has to spend a percentage of their preparation time as a defense getting ready for those formations, which means they won't be as ready to perform against your base people or your 11 personnel or your your 12 personnel when you only have one back on the backfield with two tight ends and two wides, or vice versa. So whenever you don't have two backs on the field, your opponent wasted all their time preparing for a two back offense. And it's as a defensive coordinator, McDermott was really wary of making his opponent think about a lot of things with his offense, because on any given week, it may be that they never run a two-back set in the game, but yet his opponent had to prepare for it. And that's an advantage, and that's something that that he likes to maximize with Patrick DeMarco on his roster, and, of course, they just signed Zach Olstead as well.
I like what Sean also said in response to your question about the roster size now. It is 90 or at 90, but he took great pains to say that, look, you don't just need 90 guys. Just you can say, we've got our 90. You want to have guys who you think have something to offer.
He called it the right 90.
The right 90, yeah. That's what I mean by him thinking through things, right? It's not the reflex is, oh, we got a roster spot, got to fill it. Got to fill it. We might get lucky. But they don't look at it like that. They look at it like, let's get the right people here.
It is kind of comforting, because when a couple of jamokes like you and me talk to a guy who really knows what he's doing, we should be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'm like that.
I'm like that all the time. I was like that as a player, too. It is comforting for fans to see that their team is attacking at all fronts. They're still doing the next-gen statistics. They're using the football science part of it, the physical science, I can't remember the name. Sports science side, to help him structure practice next week, and they're putting that together even as we speak. And I know back in the day when I was around, they didn't have any of that stuff, and the coach could lay out his practice schedule weeks in advance because they knew the NFL schedule, they knew that, and they'd say, hey, we're going to practice here,
and this is what we're going to do at practice.
On the contrary, these days they keep it so flexible. They don't go that far into the distance because they don't know the kind of workload or the kind of sleep and rest and practice schedule and what the players physically are going to be feeling on that day. And they want to be sensitive to it and make sure they get – if they can go hard, they're going to go hard. But if they need a break, right, they can tone it down. And what it does, ultimately, it keeps them healthy.
Right.
You stop getting the soft tissue.
You know how you and I will walk in here and over the last couple of weeks, and after just eyeballing a little bit of the off-season conditioning, and say, wow, they're really working hard today. That's not by accident. That's what you're saying. Calculated. Like, how does this team look? What's the data show? How tired they are? How are they running around? How conditioned are they? What do they need, and what can they handle, and what are we going to do the day after that? It's all calculated.
It's interesting,
sports science,
too,
just as he said.
And it was a little bit this way when I played, but only at the later part of my career. When I first got in the league back in the 80s, it was about lifting hard and being strong and fast. Now, I think I see these guys training, and I hear them talk, and I hear about the nutrition and all the things that they take.
They get yoga.
Yeah. It's about being an athlete.
Yeah.
It's not about being big and strong and then playing football. It's about being a football player who can play, who's an athlete, who's flexible, who can turn his hips and run, who can do things that are, their core strength is off the charts. And it wasn't until the last part of my career where I ever heard anybody mention what a core strength was. They didn't even address it. It wasn't even an issue. It wasn't even part of your training vernacular. And now the core training is the central focus of everything they do. And that's how the league has evolved. And these, the sports science guys are all over it. And it makes these guys, well head and shoulders above what they were just 20 years ago.
Squeezing a call from Hank in West Seneca. Hank, go ahead. You're on the air.
Listen, what's up with the existing quarterback, Nate? How can we hardly hear anything about him?
Because because we're all enamored with Josh Allen. That's all, Hank. It has nothing to – Nate Peterman is throwing – he's throwing extremely well. He's doing everything. And I spoke to him briefly once. He said, no, I've – he feels like he's light years ahead of where he was last year. And for his critics, they'll all say, hey, of course. And he had no place to go but up. But Nate Peterman is also in the mix. I saw him out there working through the things with the quarterbacks yesterday. So, yeah, he's still there, and he's still in the mix at quarterback.
And Steve's right. You got a first-round draft pick, seventh pick overall. That's where the attention's going to be, but that's on the part of the outsiders, people like us, people like the media. I know that coaching staff keeps an eye on Nathan Peterman and probably wants to see what he has to offer them. He might have something to offer.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. What else, Hank? Go ahead.
I see the film with him throwing the ball through the basketball hoop and in the five-gallon cans. Quite a tosser if he can do that stuff. I just think he needs the experience to get less panicky when he gets in the real game.
Yeah, I don't know if he was panicky. I mean, he had a really rough start at Los Angeles with, first-half interceptions. Two of them really difficult to pin on him. And things kind of fell apart. It was a rough start, no question. But in the game against the Colts, no quarterback had a chance to do anything in that weather. So
yeah.
I don't think he's panicky or shaky. In fact, there were preseason games, and it's only preseason, but preseason games where he looked really good, I thought, last year.
Absolutely. That's why he made the team.
Yeah.
That's exactly why he made the team. He played extremely well in the preseason last year. And there's no doubt, Nate Peterman has got a lot of things he's got to work on. He's got a long way to go as an NFL quarterback. He knows that. But I think the key thing is he's working hard at it. He wants to be better. He knows he came up short last year on an opportunity that really, you think about the opportunity he had and how well it could have gone. He knows that that's an opportunity that he may never get back. He may never get another opportunity as good as the one he had in Buffalo last year when they benched Tyrod Taylor and stuck him in the game. Maybe that's what did it to him. Maybe he felt the gravity of that situation, and it was too much for him at that point of his career. But Nate Peterman's still a part of the conversation. He's still in the mix at quarterback, and I think the club still thinks he can be an asset for him, if not as a starting quarterback or even a backup, certainly a third guy on the roster who's going to stay ready and be a part of the team.
All right, a lot of things to talk about as we return. What's the biggest change on how you will consume the NFL once gambling is legal, sports betting is legal? Give us a call on that. We're going to be talking with London Fletcher, we believe, in the next couple of minutes from his home in Charlotte, North Carolina. So stick around for that. And we'll talk about anything regarding the Bills. Steve and I are here until 3 today. One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health. We are coming to you from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker coming to you from our One Buffalo studio. Tomorrow, Thurman Thomas is going to join us, Steve. Tomorrow, Tre'Davious White scheduled to join us tomorrow. And a couple of other guests coming up later in the week. Steve Weiss from NFL Network is going to join us on Friday to make it through the week.
Thurman Thomas.
He was here last week. He'll be here again tomorrow. And Matt Bowen's going to join us. Is that tomorrow? Yes, I forgot about that. Matt Bowen, former Bills safety.
Wow, the rest of their week's really good.
Yeah.
What happened to today?
No. Today's fine.
No, we had the head coach, Sean McDermott, on. And London Fletcher's coming on.
London Fletcher, moments away from being on the show with us from his home in North Carolina. In the meantime, let's hear from you. Phone lines open, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Our question of the day, what will be the biggest change on how you consume the NFL now that gambling is illegal? And a couple of tweets on this on the tweet sheet. Anthony Domenico says, sports betting has been legal in Ontario for a while. Has not changed how I consume sports at all. And Buffalo Bills fan to you says, I do not gamble, and I think this is only a distraction to the true game. I'm not a fan of gambling, and I hope this does not tempt people into situations and spending that is beyond their means. I am tired of fantasy. This will only add to that nonsense. That, believe it or not, Steve, is kind of the way I feel. I do not gamble on sports. I do think it serves to distract from the true game. I am also prepared to admit that there's no putting that back in the jar now. It's coming.
Listen,
it's here, and it's going to happen.
Yeah,
so
listen,
I'm all right.
And for him that just tweeted that, he's sick of the fantasy. Listen, the fantasy thing is enormous. I mean, if you don't get what they're doing with fantasy, you got to just take a deep breath, back up, and take a big look at it because it's huge.
I know. I don't think it's huge.
Good.
It has no interest for me. That's all I'm saying.
It's because you have no friends that you can play fantasy football with. That's why.
Plenty of friends.
Yeah. But that's it for a lot of people, it is an absolute blast because it makes them feel closer and more involved in the game because they know the game. They get to know it much better. It raises fan interest. Now, the one thing about it is that I don't like is nobody picks a fantasy offensive line. Some of these guys aren't even – You know, they don't even get right. The fantasies. They're not involved in it. Even
are these football fans playing around? We'll talk more about this. Okay. We've got a special guest on the line with us from his home in Charlotte, North Carolina. 16 years in the National Football League, several of those years with the Buffalo Bills. Happy to have former Bills linebacker London Fletcher on the line with us. London, is John Murphy and Steve Tasker up here in Buffalo. Thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
What's going on, guys? Thanks for having me.
London is down there. We got him on the line because we sent a crew down there today. London, who does a lot of television work already on CBS Sports Network, has just completed an interview with our crew for a special series coming up for the second consecutive year this summer. Top 10 list of the Bills. They talked to you about, I believe, being one of the top 10 free agent signings in Bills history, London. Is that right? Is that what the questions were about?
That is correct. I was honored to be on that list, and then my first question was, where do I rank?
Right.
I wanted to know what number that I'm that I am on that list. I'm honored because you think about the history of the. They didn't tell me.
They won't tell you.
I gotta wait to the show.
Well, I guess
I have to wait until the show.
Well, I guess it's not going to be number one then. Otherwise, they would have told you, right?
Well, maybe I'm holding out for a surprise.
Yeah, all right.
In London, no surprise that you're on that list and maybe right up near the top. Because you came here to Buffalo in 2002 and just lit it up right away. What'd you have, 209 tackles in your first season with the Bills? You came, they plugged in the lineup, and you just took off from there, huh?
Yeah, I did. It was a great fit, great scheme for me. Greg Williams, the head coach, I had obviously watched his defenses from Tennessee, in the past, and I know it was a very aggressive scheme, one that the middle linebacker would make a ton of plays in. And that was one of the things that attracted me to signing with the Bills. And, I had, Pat Williams was my nose tackle. He did a great job of keeping blockers off of me. And, a lot of my other teammates did a good job of allowing me to make plays. But it was a great fit for me right from the start.
Talk a little bit, Fletcher, you've retired. You're now in the broadcast industry. You're in here with Murph and I, but you're also on CBS Sports Network. I work for CBS on the TV side of it as well over on the network. And I do hits for you guys on the Tops pregame show, that other pregame show. And you guys are on for like 4 hours every Sunday, right?
We are. We're on for 4 hours. We got a lot of content, man. The NFL is huge. Those 4 hours, believe it or not, go fast, Steve. And it's one of those things where you like think, man, 4 hours, that's a long time to be on television. But we're on every Sunday morning on CBS Sports Network. That other pregame show, we call it Tops,
right,
for short. Started 8 a.m. and, we go to noon. And you do a great job of coming on and giving us insight on the games that you will be, broadcasting during that day.
Yeah, it's fun. I know you guys have a lot of fun on that show, and because you're on that show, you keep up with what happens in the offseason. Like you say, it's a 12-month a year. There's all kinds of content. Give us your impressions of this draft class. I mean, we spent months talking about the quarterbacks. I mean, what do you think about, what was your take on all those guys getting drafted so high? And if you have an opinion, what's your opinion on Josh Allen, the guy the Bills got?
I thought the quarterback class, it didn't surprise me that, you had five quarterbacks taken in the first round. I think it's a little bit, far-fetched to think those guys will live up to the 83 draft class. And, you think about Jim Kelly and some of those other guys that were in that class, Dan Marino, John Elway. But it was a really good class. I think good, not great. Josh Allen, you look at him, big, strong kid. Can throw the football around. And the main thing that's going to have to, obviously be worked out with him is his accuracy, especially on some of the short and intermediate throws. So I'm sure he's working hard, getting those things cleaned up. When you think about Buffalo and the weather there and the wind in that stadium, you need a big, strong quarterback. And I'm sure a lot of people looked at him and said, man, maybe we have the second coming of Jim Kelly.
With former Bills linebacker London Fletcher on the line with us, it wouldn't surprise anyone to learn that you kept a close eye on the first-round linebackers who went in the draft a couple of weeks ago in London, including the Bears' eighth overall pick, Roquan Smith. You think he reminds you of you, I've read, right? You think he reminds you of the closest thing that you've seen to you, right?
Yes, he really does. I watched him in the national championship game and also the semifinals and just saw him, you know, running around, making plays all over the field. It's like this guy wants to make every single tackle. And you mentioned me, you know, setting the record when I came to Buffalo. I wanted to make every single tackle in that game. So, you know, you look at him, he's not the biggest guy. I think he's like 6 foot, 235. I wasn't the biggest linebacker, but just a tremendous will and desire to get to the football, instincts, and the guy can, he can cover. I think the Bears got a you know, the next great linebacker with Roquan Smith.
Yeah, one of the things, London, that happens in the NFL, it used to be, and maybe you still think it is, run and stop the run. It almost got to be like a slogan on a bumper sticker. You got to run and stop the run. And now it's kind of evolving into a throwing league, and it seems to be more about rushing the passer and getting turnovers. Has it gone all that way yet, or is it – there's still a lot of teams that are pretty – you know, look at the teams that are successful. They still have big offensive lines, and they can run it.
Well, you think about from a defensive standpoint, you talk about, you know, getting out to the quarterback and getting sacks and getting takeaways and things like that. You have to stop the run first and foremost. So it's hard to rush the quarterback or rush the passer in third and three or third and twos. Conversely, when you look at from the offensive standpoint, you know, they want to be in those third and short situations. So, you know, obviously running the ball is vital. The teams, even the Eagles, they were one of the better, best running teams in the National Football League, and that was key why they were able to win that Super Bowl. Just the rules dictate kind of throwing the football around a little bit more now. So you are going to have to be able to get turnovers and get after the quarterback and cover a little bit more, especially at the linebacker position. That's just kind of the nature of the NFL now.
London, you talked about Roquan Smith going to Chicago. Any thoughts on the Bills first-round linebacker, Tremaine Edmonds, coming out of Virginia Tech? What do you know about him? What did you see about him?
Yeah, so I was at the Combine this year through the NFL Legends community. I was a mentor for the linebackers, so I met Smith, and I also spent a lot of time with Edmonds, you know, just being with those linebackers, being around those guys. I was very impressed with the way Edmonds carried himself, the way he was just, you know, absorbent to learning about, you know, hey, what it takes to be a pro in the National Football League. You know, you saw his movement on the doing his workout at the Combine. Big kid. I mean, 6'5", young, athletic. I think he's just scratching the surface. You know, as he gets older, his body really matures. You know, for the Bills, I think the two guys they got in their first round, they have to be extremely excited about, you know, with Edmonds. He'll be a playmaker for that defense for years to come. You know, with that kind of size and athleticism, he'll make a ton of plays.
London, I got a question about your career. How did you manage to stay on the field as long as you did? You know, 250 consecutive games at linebacker and really never missed a game in your 16 years. That was your calling card. How'd you do that?
You know, first and foremost, God's grace. I was genetics, you know, the way I was built. I'm, you know, big thighs and legs and a big butt. So that was one of those things. You know, it helped keep me healthy. You know, when I get into some compromised positions and I was able to stay healthy. And just the way I trained, the way I kind of took care of my body, listening to my body, also getting rest. So all those things kind of added up to my being able to not miss a game. And then the trainers for the three teams that I played for, they did a great job of getting me ready to be able to play on game day.
Last question I have for you, and we're back to your work with CBS Sports Network with that other pregame show. Steve and I have spent a lot of time over the last two shows talking about the Supreme Court ruling yesterday and legalized gambling. I wonder, how do you think that might impact the way your pregame show and other pregame shows present information on Sunday game day? What do you think will change if there's legalized gambling out there?
You know, I'm sure they'll probably mention the point spread. I mean, it was always out there. It's not right. Like some thing that people didn't know about, and, you know, the point spread. But I look at, like, I know you all talked about fantasy a little bit earlier. So with the fantasy, we address fantasy. We have, you know, several fantasy segments in our show during those 4 hours. So I don't think we'll get to the point where we're doing, you know, several segments on gambling or the point spread. But, you know, I'm sure the networks are kind of trying to figure out how they want to handle that issue. You know, it's out there. People are going to want to tune in to find out what we think about that. We'll probably we make picks anyway, but maybe we'll be picking against the spread now a little bit more. So I don't know. I'm sure it'll be an element that needs to be added.
Yeah, absolutely. There's going to be a few more segments to add to the roster. Plus, it won't be. It sounds like Las Vegas won't be the only place setting lines anymore. You know, it'll be more than one, and it'll be all every state. And if that happens, you could have one line in Vegas and one line in New Jersey, and they may be very widely. So it'll be interesting to see how that happens. But there's no doubt, well, right? I mean, you're going to have to address it in your show. I mean, it's going to be more it's going to be like fantasy, correct? Fantasy football.
Yeah, you know, it will. I happen to be listening to NFL radio yesterday on XM.
Yeah.
And Brent Musburger was on there, and he was talking about, you know, Brent does the bookmaking type of deal in Vegas now, and he was talking about, even though that question came up about the different lines for different states, and he said, really, you won't see a wide variety in the point spread. Like one state won't have it as a team as a 4-point favorite, and then another state have them as a 9-point favorite. He said the line will be close in proximity. There won't be a ton of things. Just, I guess he said, with the technology and the computers and all the analytics that come into that, you know, the setting of the line. He said there won't be major differences as it relates to that. But you know, I'm sure we'll have to kind of figure out how to address it. But I don't think, you know, most people want. I don't think it's going to be a big, you know, emphasis though, because at the end of the day, you just want to watch the games.
Right.
I hope you're right.
Yeah. I know that. I know it's the same with me and Murph. I mean, that's what I'm going to be doing.
Right.
I mean,
care about who wins and loses. Right. Not everything else. Hey, London. Yeah, thanks for this.
No problem. I find myself if I got a couple dollars on a game, I can't enjoy it. So I'd much rather, even if it's just dinner, I'd much rather just watch a game than be stressed about having to buy a guy dinner.
I understand that. Exactly. Thanks for this, London. Thanks for participating in the project for the fellows down there, the top 10 list, and we look forward to watching that this summer. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
London Fletcher, four-time Pro Bowl, 16 years in the league, 5 of those years with the Buffalo Bills, and he is part of the series that will launch again this summer, the top 10 list, one of the top 10 free agent signings in Bills history. London will play a big role in that. And, yeah, no doubt London will be one of the top 10 free agent signings.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's I can see history. That. Yeah, the guy coming in, having the career he did, even in the midst of a rough time for the franchise, he played really well in the middle of that defense the early 2000s. And to put those 5 years on top of, you know, or in the midst of a 16-year career that it spanned as far as it did, a guy – and listen, he was – I don't know what he was listed at. He's like 5'9", maybe 5'10".
It says 5'10" on paper, but he probably was 5'9".
And he played for 16 years in the middle of the NFL in defense, and that says a lot about the kind of guy he was.
Won a Super Bowl with the Rams before he came here.
He was truly a great player as a short guy.
Yeah. All right, a break here. We're back with more in a moment. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. And this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker along with John Murphy here at One Bills Drive.
You go.
I got it. We were talking about earlier to London Fletcher. We also had Sean McDermott on the show. We've got this conversation going about we all have these conversations once in a while about what it's like to be rich and famous.
Well, here's what's going on. Rookies are signing their paycheck.
Right.
There's contracts right now. So they're getting that bonus check right now.
And all
now.
Of a sudden, they are rich and famous.
Yeah.
And so there's an article out that had what some of these guys had decided they were going to spend their first paycheck on. And, we don't know how much it is, but they're talking about, for the most part, they talk about houses and cars, you know.
Yeah.
Right. And then you get the guy like Josh Rosen. You wonder, Josh Rosen, he wants to invest his. Wow, that is completely unfun.
Another reason why you don't want to draft him.
Exactly,
he'd be
right?
A smart
he's
investor.
Totally, he's like so well-grounded and smart, it's almost uncomfortable.
No, he's got, you know, like the Atlanta Falcons, the Calvin Ridley, the receiver from Alabama. He says he's going to get his help his mom get a place to stay in a nice car. That's the first thing he's going to do. Because all these guys, you know, most of these guys, you know, there are a lot of people that help them get to where they are. Most often it's their family, those people who raised them. Josh Allen, our own Josh Allen, said he's nothing, anything he's running out to buy after he signs his rookie contract. He wants to save his money. And Tremaine Edmonds, he signed his rookie deal Saturday. How about this? Tremaine Edmonds kind of got it. He says he hasn't had time to think about what he's going to do with his first paycheck. I said, it doesn't matter. He wants to give something back to his family, but he's going to get help. His brother Terrell's also a first-round draft pick.
I'll go halves on you.
Yeah,
on
yeah we'll go halves. These are the mom and dad of the house, right? And if your mom and dad say, hey, you know, both of you should kick in the same amount, and we get us a twice as good a house.
You know what's overwhelming? You look through the list of all the first-round picks, and they're all asked by ESPN reporters in the NFL towns. So 32 responses. I'm guessing at least 25 that I looked through here, Steve, talk about their mom. I want to do something for my mom. I want to get a house for my mom, a car for my mom. I'm going to send my mom on vacation. Patriots tackle Isaiah Wynn says, Mike Hughes from Minnesota, my dream is to get my mom her house, and that's probably what I'll end up doing. Saquon Barkley, second overall pick. This is an interesting quote. One of my big goals was to buy my mom a house, and I was able to achieve that goal before I was able to sign my contract. That's a credit to my team, the guys around myself, Rock Nation, and the decisions made.
And then the NCAA, the president of the NCAA, spitting his coffee out. Who's giving him that money?
But he did. I mean, he probably got money from, you know,
his agents. His advance from an agent. Yeah, and they knew that. You know, Sam Darnold, the Jets pick, hasn't thought about how he's going to spend it. It's going to be – it's an estimated $20 million signing bonus. Wow.
James Washington, second-round pick of the Steelers, says he can finally replace his high school truck, a 1986 Chevy C10. He said, thanks to a $4.5 million deal, he can do that. He said, I'm fixing it up right now. Oh, he's fixing it up. He's not replacing it. He's restoring it. Fixing it up. Restoration. New paint job. New motor. I'd rather do that than go buy a brand new Camaro.
See,
he's
how about that?
86, that's a 32-year-old car that he's fixing
up.
Yeah,
but you know what, though? Let me tell you something. My kids have done this, too. And I drive around a vehicle that I you know, kind of cherish. So, you know, you've been through a lot with some of these things. You know, especially when you're in college. You know, you can road trip with the guys. The guys pile in. You go to mom and dad's house for a weekend at Thanksgiving. You're all piling in your old Corolla or whatever, Civic, or, you know, you name it, Volkswagen. And you kind of get attached to it. You know, we've had vehicles come through
you
our family.
You get attached to a new car.
Yeah, but, you know, it's not the same. So if you have the cash and you want to and you can hop it out, too. It's not like you just got to, you know, fix the dent in the fender and give it a new paint job or something. I mean, you can hop them out, right? Rims, new seats, put an electronics package in it with a new TV screen and all the, you know, you can make it into like a, you know, with all the bells and whistles. So, yeah, I like that idea. Keep your old college car, you know, and hop it out. I like that. See, because believe me, the car I drove a 1973 Opel Manta in college.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh is right. Now, and yeah, if I would have had the money, I wouldn't have fixed it.
It doesn't even sound safe.
Comparatively speaking, it wasn't.
I bet.
But that's nothing either. Listen, I told you the story. We have a vintage car in my house.
Yeah, we were talking about
I inherited it.
Your Mustang.
A 65 Mustang. Do you know what you're sitting in a 1965 Mustang that's right off the showroom floor? My father-in-law bought it off the showroom floor, 1965. You know what you're sitting in? A lawn chair. It's a lawn chair. There's like – they had to add the seat belts later. I mean – nobody even wore seatbelts. You're sitting in a folding leather-back lawn chair going as fast as a Mustang will go in a rag top.
You're driving this car? Did you get
it? It's less dangerous to drive a crotch rocket with no helmet than a 65 Mustang with all the power it had.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe
it. Are you driving it? Did you get it back yet?
Not yet. We're getting it. It's getting fixed up. Oh, we haven't got it back yet.
Can I borrow it?
I know people. Yeah.
I'd like to try that.
Listen, in the summertime, that thing, there's nothing like
it.
But believe me, you feel nude. You feel so unsafe driving in that thing with the top down.
Well, now you got trucks and SUVs.
Yeah.
and people driving huge, you know.
But the I get that. It's where this kid's going to, where this thing's going to fix up his 86, whatever it was.
32-year-old truck.
32-year-old truck and fix it up and keep driving. I like it.
Hey, when we come back, we want to talk more about, not more about this, because really the answers are not that interesting, what they're doing with their first paycheck.
I'm disappointed. I was completely disappointed.
Not that interesting.
I mean, I get it. They're moms.
We're not talking anymore about
that. Their moms and their cars, well, but yeah.
We got stuff to talk about, including gambling. Will it change the way you consume NFL football? And Sean McDermott's comments. We'll go over some of those when we come back. And, of course, your phone calls are welcome. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Steve and I back with more. One Bills live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Got the update from One Bills Drive. The Bills wrapped up today's edition of the offseason conditioning program a couple of hours ago. With the rookies now involved with the veterans for the last few days, the rookies were in for the rookie minicamp over the weekend. They stick around now for workouts with the veterans. Another one of those tomorrow. A week from today, they'll start the first of their OTAs, organized team activity, a little bit different pace to the practices starting next Tuesday. Micah Hyde has made the NFL's top 100 list. It was unveiled last night on NFL Network. Micah Hyde, number 62 among the top 100 players in the National Football League. He is one behind Rams defensive tackle Ndamukong Suh, one ahead of Cincinnati defensive tackle Geno Atkins. Hyde went to his first Pro Bowl last year, and now he's on the NFL top 100 list. Arizona Cardinals head coach Steve Wilks says Sam Bradford is our starter. He told NFL Network that Josh Rosen can win the job, but right now Sam Bradford is the starter. Sam's going to be the first guy to go out there, but everybody fighting for a position. Colts quarterback Andrew Luck still rehabbing his throwing shoulder from the surgery he had more than a year and a half ago on a torn right labrum. Colts GM Chris Ballard told Pro Football Talk that Luck, the three-time Pro Bowler, should be ready for training camp. Big business deal down in Carolina today as David Tepper will sign the deal to purchase the Carolina Panthers. Tepper's been a minority owner for the Pittsburgh Steelers for the last several years. The Panthers to be sold for $2.2 billion, setting a record for the highest sale price for an NFL team, surpassing the Bills' sale price of $1.4 billion from 2014. Hockey playoffs tonight. It is Tampa Bay and Washington, the Eastern Conference Finals, Game 3. 8 o'clock faceoff in Washington tonight. The Caps lead that series 2-0. Last night, Vegas beat Winnipeg 3-1, tying that series up at 1 win apiece. They'll play again tomorrow night as the series shifts to Vegas. And in the NBA playoffs tonight, it is the Eastern Conference Finals, Cleveland at Boston, Game 2 of their series. Boston won the first game. It's an 8:30 tip-off tonight. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker from our One Buffalo studio. Steve, I've tried to plug into these playoffs. Last night, 9 o'clock tip-off for the NBA Western Conference Finals. I'm sorry. Too late for me, Steve.
I know. I get it.
You stayed up?
I did. I stayed up. I hung in there till the end. It was a pretty good first half. It was tied at the first half, 56 apiece for the Warriors and the Rockets. And then in the second half – the Warriors just took over. They beat them by 10 or 12 or whatever the score was, the Rockets had no answer for Kevin Durant. The Rockets tend to play a one-on-one type of offensive basketball, and it's just not. And after the game, Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal both were just shaking their head. They just felt like that whole series is wrapped up already.
Really?
Yeah, they thought the Rockets, just the kind of basketball the Rockets want to play is just doomsday for them. They're not going to, unless the Rockets come out in game two and play a completely different brand of offensive basketball, they have no shot at beating the Warriors.
What about the popular opinion I've heard and read several times that the real NBA finals are the Western Conference finals, that no matter who comes out of the East, they cannot compete with either Golden State or Houston? Do you agree with that?
Well, it's certainly, you can make that case because the Warriors are the defending champs, and they're you know, they were supposed to be there, and everybody expected them to be there. And you know, coming out of the East, you've got LeBron James and a bunch of guys from Cleveland, and then you've got the Celtics, who I can't remember even who plays on their team. You know, I mean, they had Kyrie Irving; he's not playing.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, that's tough to get your head around, because the Houston Rockets, the guys who got crushed last night by the Warriors, they had a phenomenal season. They were number one in the West. And they're number one in the West because The Warriors dropped like 10 of their last 15 games or 15 of their last 17 games. They just couldn't win any games at the end because they were kind of ready to get the playoffs started, and they were injured and they wanted to get healthy for the playoffs. So they didn't really care about getting the number one seed. But nevertheless, the Rockets really had a nice year, and now they got to the playoffs and the conference finals, and the style of basketball they play isn't going to get them past the Warriors. So if you're making that case, you can just hand the Warriors the trophy now. I hate to say that.
I mean, Kevin Durant.
I still want to say LeBron playing. Kevin LeBron's unbelievable. Kevin Durant is unbelievable. The story goes he's a very tall point guard. They say he's 6'10 point guard. Well, they say he's 6'10 because he has told every team he's been on to list him at 6'10. He's actually like 7'2.
Really?
Seriously. He's the tallest guy on the floor. And because he says once you get your height to 7 foot, nobody will give you the ball outside the paint.
No one will believe that you're
right. Nobody will. They all put you down at the baseline. And he never wanted to play there, so he always told them, "Say you're listing me at 6'10. Don't ever put me at 7 foot," which is, it's what he is. You go look.
I've looked. I've never thought he was that tall. I know he's 6'10, 6'11.
He's listed at 6. I'm telling you, somebody made a joke last night, and I think I kind of jumped on the Kenny Smith last night. And says you got a 7'2" point guard, you know. Right, but you get the idea.
Yeah,
you get the idea. And I knew it is true that he said, "Listen, don't list me at my regular height because
my actual height." Yeah, I believe that. Hey, we got a couple of things on the table to talk about, and we got a lot of time this hour to talk about it. And we'd love to have your participation. Lines are open 803-0550. Outside Buffalo, it's a toll free call 1-888-552-550. You can do it on Twitter at @OneBillsLive. Like this, what will be the biggest change on how you consume the NFL once gambling is legal, as the Supreme Court ruled yesterday it should be? Again, tweet us in your response or call us. The Twitter poll so far, most of you, 58%, more than half of you, say no change. It won't change how you consume the NFL. No change because I don't gamble, 58% of you. Okay, 26% of you say, you know, now that it's legal, I might give gambling a try. And 16% say, you know what? 70% say, you know what, I will gamble more because it's legal. I will watch more because it's legal. It's the 26% that interests me because I do think that's what they're going for. That as these leagues make noise about the integrity of the game, protecting the integrity of the game, the NFL and the others, colleges, everybody, they're making that noise, but they're also, I'm sure, doing the hard calculation like, okay, how many more viewers are going to be watching our games? Where can we dip into the money that people are wagering? I do think that's a calculation they're making right now. And that 26%, you say, big deal. That's a lot of people who have not maybe, you know, as the answer says, I may give gambling a try. People who have not gambled before, now we're going to give it a try because it's legal. That there's money there.
Right. And they feel safe and they feel like it'll be regulated and they don't have to talk to somebody they don't know or trust. They can, you know, go to professionals and have it done. So that's a big topic today. We're also getting a lot of feedback on the conversation we had with Sean McDermott, head coach of the Bills. He came in, and one of the things that people are talking about the show who heard the sound was that Sean McDermott mentioned what the offense is going to look like, and I asked him what it was going to look and how it was going to look different. Was it just because there were going to be different players? He said, no, it's going to be a little bit more multidimensional than it was a year ago, and then people really want to hear that because they wanted to, you know, one of the reasons they had the offense go the way it went last year was they didn't throw the football very well, 31st in the National Football League in passing, and to have your head coach come out and say, we're going to be multidimensional a little bit more, you caught it. He said, listen, we're going to look at our opponents, and we're going to match up with them, and where we have a matchup that we can win, we're going to go after them. That's kind of fun to hear because that's what really NFL coaching is. And that's what, you know, whenever it doesn't go well, that's what everybody accuses the coaching staff of not doing. And yet Sean McDermott, along with Brian Daboll, new offensive coordinator, that's exactly what they're going to do. And I think it's pretty exciting to hear about.
Steve asked him the question. So new coordinator, new offense, new quarterbacks, what's the new offense going to look like? Here's what Sean McDermott said.
When you look at players now in the second year of just being around our building, so that'll be new. I think there's a comfort level with that, and sometimes comfortable is bad. In this case, I think comfort is good in this sense. But with respect to the new system, without giving away too much, I think you're going to see a system that takes advantage of situations and matchups where and when we can, and an offense that you know, is a little bit more multidimensional as opposed to what we saw last year. You know, we'll get around to preseason where the fans will get to see that through training camp, and I can't wait to see the fans up at St. John Fisher. We're excited to be there. Not yet. There's a long time between now and then, and a lot of work to do. But I think they'll be pleased with where we are and what they see when they get up to training camp.
He says the offense is going to be more multidimensional. You naturally think they're going to throw it more, right? And not that they're going to be, an aerial circus, but they were one of the most – I think they were the team that ran it more than any other team in the NFL on a percentage basis last year. And so I would anticipate when he says multidimensional, he means we're going to open it up a little bit. We're going to throw it around a little bit, which we didn't feel comfortable doing with Tyrod Taylor the last couple of years.
Well, it's hard to imagine him throwing it less.
You're right.
You know, or yeah, less effectively.
Less effectively, especially, yes.
They were so limited in it last year just because, you know, the ball wouldn't come out. And it will be interesting. And it will put in – a lot of fans have brought this up, and it's been one of the overriding concerns about the roster going into this offseason, and now it continues to be, is that, you know, they don't have a lot of faith in Kelvin Benjamin and Zay Jones to be a number one, number two combo. They signed Jeremy – Zay Jones,
fans.
It seems to be like, you just hear it. Anytime you bring up the offense and stuff, people bring up, eventually they bring up the fact that they don't have any faith in these wide receivers. They think they need a new wide receiver. They signed Jeremy Curley. They got the two draft picks in Ray McLeod and Austin Prohl, who they're looking to maybe contribute. But by and large, you know, that's the thing that you look at now. If they're going to throw the football more, who are they going to throw it to?
Yeah, I mean, Rod Streeter is a factor, a guy who had a really good training camp before he got hurt last year. There are others. Now you got me coughing.
Yeah, I know.
I don't think they're totally bereft of wide receiving talent, but certainly, you know, there's question marks there, clearly.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think they have to get to a point where they're going to get comfortable with these guys or at least find out what they do extremely well. And I think one of the things that's obvious for me, if you're going to talk about what the roster looks like now, it's got to center around, and receiving, it's got to center around Kelvin Benjamin, Charles Clay, and LeSean McCoy. And then Zay Jones, Jeremy Curley, and those guys who are all kind of the question marks. Zay Jones looking to take a big step forward this year in his second campaign. You think he's going to try and do that? But I think for right now, it's like, what's Kelvin Benjamin really good at? He's a big catch radius. You're trying to get him in situations where he's one-on-one coverage. He's an enormous target. Use him in that regard. The way they did in the Colts game in the snow here in Buffalo when he caught those two sideline passes, one to keep the drive alive and the other in the touchdown. So things like that. Charles Clay, who is a really difficult matchup as a tight end. If he can stay healthy this year, which is kind of a big if because his knee has been fragile in the past, he is really, really good, and I think he could be utilized a lot more than he was with Tyrod Taylor pulling the trigger. So, and then, of course, LeSean McCoy. I mean, you throw it in his general direction, he spears it with one hand and takes off running. I mean, the guy is phenomenal. So he's obviously a centerpiece as well. So I think to start with, the way the current roster is constructed, I think that's who the three guys you look at. It's Kelvin Benjamin, Charles Clay, and Shady. And then if you can get others – to contribute or maybe even step up and say, hey, wow, look at this guy. Let's start using him more. I think those are the guys you key on.
Well, and let's face it, what's really changed about the offense is the quarterback position, right? There's going to be a different quarterback. Tyrod's out. It's going to be either McCarron or Nathan Peterman or the rookie, Josh Allen. And, you know, he's had a couple of days now in practice, at least the rookie minicamp over the weekend, a couple of days with the veterans over the last few days and the workouts, and I asked Sean McDermott, what does he see from Josh Allen? Does he see from him as far as how he's throwing the ball, and what does he see from him in the classroom as they go through the playbook? Here's what Sean McDermott said a couple hours ago.
Well, I'll start with the classroom first, because that's really where it starts for us, is the command of the offense, and we're seeing a young man that has taken the right approach through the weekend, rookie minicamp. You see the leadership, you see the intelligence. And then when we transitioned to the field, I thought he had great command of the offense, great command of the huddle, and then had two really good solid days, in terms of the way he threw the football. Most of it was passing game because of the nature of the camp. We didn't run the ball much. When we did, it was few and far between, but had a nice 2 days of camp.
I mentioned to Steve, I was here Saturday, and he asked me how he looked, and I said, you ever hear the term live arm? That's what that's the sense I got from watching Josh Allen, just a live arm, ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to struggle to throw the ball in any type of condition. I don't think he's going to struggle to get the ball outside the numbers, right. Which some quarterbacks do. So he does have a live arm, which is important. At the same time, there are other areas that are important as well, which I already mentioned, the leadership, the command of the huddle. It's a one day at a time process for him and all of us right now as we continue to stack quality days on top of one another as we move forward.
You know, that's Coach Sean McDermott on the show with us a couple hours ago. I know there's more to it than having a live arm, a strong arm, but to me that's kind of where you start, right? You start with a big arm, a live arm. Not you don't need you don't need to just have an arm, but you need to have that capability, as Sean said, to throw it outside the numbers, to throw it downfield on a rope. On a line, and if you can't do that, you probably can't be effective in the NFL.
Yeah, there's so much, but if you've got all this other stuff too, you can be, even if you can't throw it as well outside the numbers. But to have a guy who can stand on the numbers on one side on a little rollout and zip it back across the field, not that you really ever design a play to do that, but when push comes to shove and you got a guy standing by himself over there, you got to be able to get it to him. It's pretty comforting for a coaching staff to know that if it's close, your quarterback can zing it in there and get it there before the DB can break on it. And it's just one more thing that widens your margin of error as a coaching staff. And another reason, you know, we talk about this offense and how it's going to look different. The main reason it's going to look different is because it is different. It's going to be new quarterback, new players, new wide receivers maybe, a couple of new offensive linemen. But it's different. It's Brian Daboll's offense. And that makes an enormous difference. It's going to have a different philosophy, a different guy running it, different guy calling plays. The words are different. The language is different. So as good as or as improved as the defensive side of the ball may be with guys coming back for their second year in the system, the offense is going to kind of revert back and start over and start installing a brand new one. Now, it remains to be seen how it'll look different. What kind of players are going to be, how good the offensive line is going to play ahead of whoever is quarterbacking. But make no mistake, it's completely different. And that's I think that's one of the things that you're going to have to see through training camp take place and take shape is the new look of this offense.
You just said something that got me thinking about an article that I read. I want to talk to you about this for a minute, Steve, and we'll talk to you as well about gambling, about quarterbacks, about Bill's offense. You can ring us up or reach to us and on Twitter. But this came out on ESPN.com, they assembled their cast of insiders, panel of ESPN insiders. And, you know, now that offseason is winding down as far as personnel acquisitions, they want their insiders to look at what these teams are made up of. And so which teams are worse right now than they were, you know, when offseason began? Which teams are worse in the NFL personnel-wise? And a couple of their insiders chose the Buffalo Bills. Which team declined the most this offseason? Was the headline on ESPN.
Right.
Field Yates, NFL insider, says the Buffalo Bills. Let me read some of this. I'm going to get your takes on this. Now, this is the part that you got to remember how you felt an hour and a half ago when Sean McDermott left. And you
yeah, were... yeah.
No, Field Yates says the Buffalo Bills declined the most this offseason. He goes, note, an important caveat, there's a long-term building process that was followed and is not in any way compromised this offseason. The Bills performed exceptionally well in single-score games last season, 6 wins, 2 losses. Which played a big part in snapping their postseason drought, but it was clear they were not sold on Tyrod Taylor, and they utilized their robust draft capital to select Josh Allen. Factoring in the quarterback transition and offensive line shuffle, Buffalo profiles as a regression team in the short term. That's Field Yates. Can you disagree with that much?
Yeah.
Let me tell you where I disagree. I want to get your first of all, offensive line shuffle, yes, but I think that might be overstated. Outside of Buffalo, people who don't understand who's here, who was added to the offensive line, situation. He says the Bills 6-2 in single score games decided by a single score or less. I don't think that's a bad thing. In fact, I think you'll find that teams that do well in games that are not decided, you know, big one way or the other, typically have a chance to improve the next year. I think I've read studies that shown that single score games, if you're winning those, you'll do well the next year. I've read those stats. But where do you find fault with what Field Yates says the Bills he names as the team that declined the most this offseason.
Well, you think about it. I mean, Richie Incognito and Eric Wood are gone, and that those are really the two guys that are the change. They're talking about the shuffle because you go to Deion Dawkins at left tackle. He played 11 games last year. He was the left tackle for the Buffalo Bills in 2017. He comes back. The right tackle and Jordan Mills also comes back. John Miller comes back. Vlad Dukas comes back. Ryan Groy comes back. And then you add Russell Bodine, who's had a good career there in Cincinnati, is back in the mix. This is an offensive line that I think got deeper. You can say maybe didn't get as good on the front line, but it is deeper. They've got a lot more quality guys. And I'll tell you this, and just between you, you're starting to hear about it now, and nobody – I don't know that Richie Incognito was going to be a Buffalo Bill this year, whether he was healthy or decided to play or not. I think he was on the downside of a career, and not only was his salary cap big, I thought they felt like they could get an upgrade there. And
Why would they extend his contract and bring him back?
And I think they had to do that to get him.
I think when they did that, they intended on him being back this year.
Yeah, I think so, but I don't know if they were that impressed with the way he played last year. I don't think he had a stellar year last year. And Eric Wood was a surprise to everybody, I think, no question about it. And he was a guy that you'd love to have back. I think that's the place where it could be more difficult to replace a guy. But even if you got a really good guard, that's not going to crush your offensive line because you can cover for a guard with your center, you can cover for a guard with your tackle, and you need a different type of player in there than a left tackle or a right tackle. I just think their offensive line is not going to regress. And because of that, and with the fact they're going to have a different quarterback back there, I think there's a lot of reason to be excited about what happens to this offense in that regard.
And the same NFL insiders, ESPN's NFL insiders, the panel they put together, they asked this panel to select – which teams took the biggest step back? Which team declined the most this offseason? I'm going to get to some of the other choices, but Aaron Schatz, editor-in-chief of Football Outsiders, says the Buffalo Bills. Let me read you what he says, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Schatz, the quarterback situation is a mess. Even if you're a believer in Josh Allen, I'm not. You have to admit he's the kind of quarterback who will likely require a lot of work to transition. He goes on to say the offensive line is a mess also, with Buffalo's three best offensive linemen gone by either trade or retirement. Football Outsiders free agency analysis also shows Trent Murphy one of the year's signings least likely to live up to the value of his three-year contract. Okay, I can poke a lot of holes in that one. Quarterback situation is a mess. I don't agree with
that.
They
weren't here last year.
Huh?
He wasn't around last year.
31st in the league in passing offense last year.
They benched their starter a year ago because he threw for less than 100 yards in three different games.
The offensive line is a mess as well. No, I don't think so. Do you?
No.
You just went through it. No, you don't think that.
Let me tell you, the quarterbacks, listen, I can get that nobody thinks A.J. McCarron can play outside of Buffalo or even outside of wherever, Cincinnati. Let me tell you something. A.J. McCarron was a fifth-round draft pick taken because he was the best player available in a higher level of draft pick than when he got taken. He was like a third-round grade, whatever you want to call it. Even if he was a fifth-round grade, there it is. He got into a stretch of games for the Cincinnati Bengals behind Andy Dalton, who was the incumbent. The Cincinnati Bengals were going to the playoffs every year, and we up in Buffalo tend to poo-poo what happens in Cincinnati. I covered Cincinnati for a lot of years. They were losing double-digit games every season until they got Marvin Lewis. And then Marvin Lewis drafted Andy Dalton. And you can say what you want, but the moment they got Andy Dalton, they were a playoff team. They got to the playoffs every year. No NFL team, even if you're like the Bengals and you get in and out of the playoffs in one game every year, you're in the playoffs and you're out on one weekend every year. Mike Brown is not apologizing to Cincinnati because his team is out of the playoffs every year after the first round. They're in the playoffs every year. Mike Brown rewarded Andy Dalton with a $100 million contract. He's not – I don't care how good A.J. McCarron is. And you can make a contract – you can make a conversation that he's as good, if not better, than Andy Dalton at this point in history. Because he got into the game for Cincinnati and threw and completed 65% of his passes for a three-game stretch and then got into the playoffs and played well enough against a Pittsburgh Steelers team to beat him, and then his defense – imploded emotionally and gave the game away.
Didn't the Bengals see that, though, Steve? Didn't the Bengals see that he could be better than
that? My point. The Bengals, with Mike Brown as their owner and Marvin Lewis as their head coach, weren't going to make a change when they're going to the playoffs every year. They were not going to pay a guy $100 million and not play him.
Okay. I just think if he would have given them a better chance to win a playoff game, why wouldn't they play McCarron? They were ready to move on.
They never had him compete to see who was better. He was never in a quarterback competition.
Okay.
I'm telling you.
You might be right.
I like A.J. McCarron. He was the one, and listen, here's the thing. I thought A.J. McCarron.
Why did all those teams pass on him?
That's a good question. Here's the thing. I thought he was the most intriguing free agent quarterback in this class, aside from the ones that were going to be available. Like, you knew that Kirk Cousins, you knew the guys in Minnesota, the Case Keenum, and you knew Teddy Bridgewater, all of those guys were going to be there. And the guys I thought might slip under the radar was a guy like A.J. McCarron. And so when free agency hit and all those guys started signing everywhere and A.J. McCarron was still sitting there, I was like, wow. I was surprised. I really was, because I thought he would be one of the guys that was the most intriguing because he has shown flashes of pretty good play or with a good team around him in Cincinnati. Played pretty well, although it was his worst game of that stretch during that playoff game against Pittsburgh was probably his worst game in that stretch of four games that he played for Andy Dalton. But I thought he was the most intriguing guy that we didn't know enough about. And I think the fact that they didn't know all that much about him scared a lot of those teams off. And I think when Buffalo came in a couple of weeks after free agency started and got him, you kind of remember that, hey, the guy's got a little experience, and he played on a pretty good football team and played pretty well when he was there. I just think, and like you said, the football outside, you say the quarterback situation's a mess. I don't know. I think at this point in the rebuild that Buffalo's going through with Sean McDermott, the way they're building their team, I think their quarterback thing is exactly right where they want it.
If Josh Allen pans out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a – yeah.
ESPN NFL Insiders asked the question, which NFL team declined most this offseason? So as I said, two of them picked the Bills. Three picked the Dolphins. I just want to get your thoughts on this before we hit our break here. Kevin Seifert says, the Dolphins' plan is difficult to discern. They parted ways with most of their best players, Sue, Jarvis Landry, and added a crew of aging veterans. Mike Sando, we just had on the show last week, right? Picked the Miami Dolphins. He said they subtracted Sue, Landry, and Mike Pouncey. They appear to be less talented as a result. And Mike Clay, ESPN Insider, picks the Dolphins. This one got my attention because I've said this on our show. It was hard not to think of the Chip Kelly era Eagles when watching the Dolphins chase culture while moving on from talented players like Jay Ajayi, Sue, Pouncey, Landry, and Michael Thomas over the last several months. He says Miami is weak or below average in most positions, and suddenly the Dolphins, he thinks, are a candidate for the first overall pick next April. I think Mike Clay is onto something there. I think the Dolphins wanted to change the culture, and in doing so, they let go basically their most talented players. Yeah, Jay Ajayi a year ago, and Ndamukong Suh and Jarvis Landry, very productive player for him. We'll see if it works out. I happen to think it will not for the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, Jay Ajayi, I sat with early last year in a production meeting. I was impressed with him. He's a sharp, intelligent, articulate guy. And I think he's obviously talented. He played extremely well. I don't know why Miami felt it was time to part ways with him.
Because he missed that trip beginning of the 2016 season? Is that really it?
Maybe. At the beginning of the 2016, they didn't release him until midway through last year. So maybe they didn't see any – he wasn't contrite enough or admitted up to that mistake or hadn't owned up to it, or maybe he had done other smaller things that say he was
–
yeah, maybe. But and I think maybe, too, they decided, well, if we're going to start someplace, let's start right there, and we're going to rebuild this thing. And they decided that since last year wasn't going the way they thought it would after a playoff year in 2016 – we're going to start rebuilding right now. And they began it midway through the season. But Ndamukong Suh, with the amount of times that he's been fined and suspended for being a kind of a knucklehead on the football field and having some frustration issues when he gets blocked or whatever, they shipped him out as well. And that's and now the Rams look like they've got the dominant defensive line that the Miami Dolphins thought they had two or three years ago when they signed him and Mario Williams and Cam Wake. And it never materialized.
Interesting article. I would recommend it to you. NFL.com NFL insiders predict the best and worst teams and which teams improved the most this offseason, which teams declined the most this offseason. Two of them picked the Bills as the biggest decliners. I don't know about that. I understand. I understand what Kevin Seif or what Field Yates wrote. You know, the Bills, you could argue the Bills took a step back, a planned step back in order to get the franchise quarterback. But still, the quarterback situation is a mess? No, I don't think so.
I get it. I mean, they
got to write something.
You know what? When you're dispassionate, it's easy to spin things one way or the other, and to overstate to make your point. And I think that's what they did in that case. I don't think Miami Dolphins are going to fall off the face of the earth either. I mean, they're not going to be uncompetitive. Because listen, I was thinking about this during the last break. Everybody thinks these teams are going to like wildly swing from what they've been in the past. I don't see it. You don't think the Bills are going to go in? They're going to play the Jets. Jets may be 0-12 by the time the Bills play them. I can't even remember where they play them in the schedule. There is no looking past these teams.
Oh no.
Nobody looked past the Cleveland Browns last year in the middle of an 0-16 season. Nobody's going to look past the Buffalo Bills. Nobody's going to look past the Buccaneers or any of these teams. You've got to play well every week, and to think that these teams are going to swing wildly one way or the other, it's impossible to say. Because even going into last year, the first half of the Bills' schedule last year with Tampa Bay, the Raiders, the Patriots, and the Denver Broncos, all these teams, you thought, man, these teams are it's going to be a gauntlet.
Yeah.
And the Bills rolled through it.
Yeah, did pretty well.
Did pretty well. So it's impossible to say at this point who's going to be good or bad, and I don't think it's going to swing wildly one way or the other for these teams.
We'll take a break. We're back with more, including NFL True or False. It is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. We're coming here from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back to the program. Steve Tasker and John Murphy on One Bills Live here at One Bills Drive. We are talking about the topic of the day, that the federal ban on gambling has been lifted yesterday by the Supreme Court of the United States. Then we also had Sean McDermott in today talking about the offense and the OTAs that are going on. We also had a little conversation with London Fletcher earlier in the program that brought back some fun memories of a guy who maybe in the top 10 free agent signings of all time. He had a 16-year career, 5'10", middle linebacker. One of the cool guys to ever do it, and a fun talk and a fun conversation there. And our Twitter poll, we've been going through all day about the biggest change on how you consume the NFL now is that gambling is illegal. Will it be a big change? And you can tweet or call your response to 1-888-550-2550 or 716-803-0550. 57% of the people who responded said, no change. I don't gamble. 26% said, I may give it a try. And then 17%, I'm going to gamble more and I'm going to watch more. Giddy
watch
up.
Out.
Yeah, so all that stuff. And we also got, you know, a ton of people are tweeting us about their stuff. And it's pretty interesting. As you might imagine, it widely varies on the response. Steve Bermel says, I disagree completely. I've never bet on a game with a shady bookie. Now that it's legal, I'll bet games.
A lot of people, I think, 27% say they'd look at it in a poll. I think that covers a lot of people who think, I wouldn't do it because I don't feel like calling a bookie. I don't feel like getting involved in something illegal. But now.
Yeah. And because, you call a bookie on your cell phone, you don't think they're monitoring the illegal activities on their, wiretap. I mean, your cell phone's traceable. I mean, creepy, you're going to get caught. I hate that. But for me, if it's easy, walking up to the game, say, I'm going to bet, how would you not? It's almost like validating your fanship, putting your money where your mouth is, right?
For some. Other people's might
even
say
even if it's a $2 bet, who cares?
Well, some people think gambling is a sin, Steve, and don't want to gamble. And those people, their needs have to be respected as well. Don't give me that look.
No.
I'm just saying some people think gambling is not cool.
I get it. There is a moral issue. I'm not going to deny it.
Here's an interesting tweet from the tweet sheet from Nick Blake. We asked the question, what will be the biggest change in how you consume NFL now that gambling's about to be legal? Nick Blake says, I voted for other. Others not an option, Nick. He says, I continue to gamble and watch all the games every Sunday. Others not an option. Usually we present other. We did not today. We get criticized for putting other as an option. Not on there today, but I think I know what you mean. You say
he's not going to gamble more. He's just going to keep gambling the way he does.
Keep doing what he does. Yep. Okay. All right. And Steve Burmell tweets in, did you just read this one? No. Another one.
Yes, I did.
Oh, that's you did. Okay. I will gamble now that it's not illegal.
Right. And then I'll say, and you read the one, a couple of them from Ontario we're getting all over it.
Here's Marcel Wilson. As invasive as mobile media culture is, many more people will be betting on different aspects of the game. I think there's something to that. Even previous non-bettors, that same revenue that we now use on mobile gaming, et cetera, will make it easy for anyone with a device linked to a card or account to give them the ability to play.
The easier it gets, the more it's going to be.
Yeah.
The easier it gets, the more prevalent it will become. The more convenient it is, the more likely it is to be used. And that is the critical element of the entire thing. And you say we sit here with these laptops and all the stuff we have back in the control room. We both have our phones right here too. We have access all the time to all the information that you ever want with the internet. And you can bet that it is going to become easier and easier and easier to make any bet you want, any size, any shape, any form. And it'll become easier and easier to do that now that the states can decide how they want to handle it, because there's, you know, a ton of income to be managed, and the states want the right to do it, and they're going to have it, and that's the way it is. It's going to happen. It'll probably happen on site at stadiums, probably at some point in the future, and certainly it'll happen on your phone at some point in the future as well. But for the time being, we're just kind of waiting to see where the dust settles.
A tweet from Osterreicher, who's an avid listener and a tweeter who follows the show from France, Steve. He says, gamblers will bet on several games, will have interest in more games, will watch more games, more audience, more money. From here, and he means France, it seems USA will legalize anything that makes money, so it's not a surprise. Not that we are better, meaning France is not better. But he's right.
Right.
And for all of the posturing and all of the comments about integrity of the game and the integrity fee. Look, once the guys with the sharp pencils start figuring out how much money there is to be made, these leagues will jump like you wouldn't believe, and college sports as well. They already are doing it. They're already figuring out. Look, the NFL owners have a meeting, I think, not next week, but maybe 2 weeks in Atlanta,
right,
at which time you better believe legalized gambling is going to be at the top of the agenda. Not helmet
they
hits.
They may skip lunch
to talk about, okay, here's, and somebody will show up there from the league with projections. Here's, if we take it over, if we have our own NFL gambling website, here's how much money we can make. If we go into partnership with casinos, here's how much money we can make. If we do it now, here's what it's worth. If we wait until more states legalize it, believe me, they are working out those details now, and the owners are all about it when they meet later this month. That's just the way it is in the NFL. I know you always say the league usually gets it right, and they do, but when it comes to money, they always are aggressive.
They
always aggressive.
There's another tweet from Len. Why would this change anything? Most, I don't know who you guess most, have gambled offshore for 20-plus years. As long as I can wager online, fine. But if I need to place bets in person, no thanks. If taxes come into play, then forget it. I'll continue to wager offshore. And there you go. There's when you're working on margin. I think, for me, when you talk about margins like that, you're talking about people who do it professionally for a living. I mean, they got to cut all the corners off. For guys like you and me, who just want to, you know, the convenience of it makes it worth it. I'm not betting the rent money. You know, I'm not betting anything except the money I would otherwise spend on a hot dog. You know. So that's not something I would ever do. But for some people who are serious and want to work on it, they're not going to change too much because they already kind of probably have the wagering thing wired the way they want it, and the taxes and the fees and the VIG don't ever enter into their conversation.
And Len's point is what really kind of turned my attention, at least altered my perception over the last 24 hours, because he's right. Most have gambled, whether offshore, with bookies. Anybody interested in gambling has not been fought back, has not had a rough time. I do think legalized gambling in some ways is going to open it up to more people. More people will gamble, and that's what will change, just the exposure of NFL and other sports gambling to more people. But for those who've already been gambling, this won't change much
at all. And one other aspect of this, when you talk about – we're actually talking about a sport that has been, you know, adverse to it because of the integrity of the game. And from Chris Pearson, he says, guys, all the information you're presenting, like the injuries, the inside information, that's all prevalent on ESPN and NFL Network with fantasy football. Could gambling pay for Bill's new stadium in downtown Buffalo with naming rights, if not state grants? It's a, you know, and he also says, hey, we're having a great show. He's right. There's so much we don't know about this.
What did he say at the end? We're having a great show.
Great show.
Oh.
And, yeah. So,
thank you.
But it's interesting because all the information you're talking about that gamblers like are already in – I mean, ESPN, NFL Network, us, and other broadcasts from other stadiums and other teams around the league – they all give out information as it's available. Now, if you're talking about getting behind the curtain and knowing stuff, you know, you're talking about a case by case situation because, you know, this game, you know, they don't have a game this week, but on opening day and everybody's healthy, it's not a big deal. And then you don't know if your injury or anybody's injury is going to be an issue at all at any point. So you're talking about a case by case thing where the media is going to be all over that injury anyway. So they're going to – and with agents and the way fantasy football is and the way teams handle it or are forced to handle it, they're supposed to be a little bit transparent with it. So they all have to – you know, all that information that everybody thought was sacrosanct a little while, you know, everybody's got it now.
Time for a little bit of NFL True and False brought to you by Yancey's Fancy New York's Artisan Cheese. True or false, Steve Tasker, the New York Jets are going to be the most – we talked about teams that are losing the most. The New York Jets are going to be the most improved – team in the AFC East. That's what Pro Football Focus says, citing the fact that they got Sam Darnold, they got Teddy Bridgewater coming back from his knee injury. They look around the rest of the AFC East and they say the Jets will be the most improved team. True, false? Steve Tasker, what do you think?
I say false.
Really?
I think the Buffalo Bills are going to be the most improved team.
Really?
I do. I told you, we had Sean McDermott. I'm on a buzz from the sugar I drank the Kool-Aid earlier. Yeah. I'm on a little buzz. Listen, I like what the moves that they've made. Even if the guys that they brought in are serviceable, I think in a lot of places they're going to be in a much better place this year than they were a year ago because they have better guys, more fitting to their program this year than they did last year.
All right, I will say true by default. No one else. I mean, I don't think the Bills personnel wise, and we can talk about this. I don't know that they've improved themselves.
Well, they go 9-7. If they go 10-6,
yeah, we're talking about personnel here. Though they might go 10-6. I would say true by default. The Jets are probably
the furthest
the most
to
improved
go.
Team. Yes, they do have the furthest to go. A break here. We're back with more One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. From today's show, it is presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Good show today. In fact, somebody on Twitter said, hey, you guys are having a good show. He sounded surprised on Twitter. Sean McDermott joined us in the first hour, and we asked him how the Buffalo offense will be different this year than it was a year ago. Here's what he said.
But with respect to the new system, without giving away too much, I think you're going to see a system that takes advantage of situations and matchups where and when we can, and an offense that you know, is a little bit more multidimensional as opposed to what we saw last year. You know, we'll get around to preseason where the fans will get to see that through training camp, and I can't wait to see the fans up at St. John Fisher. We're excited to be there.
Sean McDermott, what else did we learn from today's show? We had London Fletcher, former Bills linebacker, on the show from his home in Carolina, and he works for CBS Sports Network, followed the draft pretty closely, and has a lot of good things to say about Bills' first-round draft pick, linebacker Tremaine Edmonds.
I was very impressed with the way Edmonds carried himself, the way he was just, you know, absorbent to learning about, you know, hey, what it takes to be a pro in the National Football League. You know, you saw his movement on the doing his workout at the combine. Big kid, I mean, 6'5", young, athletic. I think he's just scratching the surface. You know, as he gets older, his body really matures. You know, for the Bills, I think the two guys they got in that first round, they have to be extremely excited about, you know, with Edmonds. He'll be a playmaker for that defense for years to come. You know, with that kind of size and athleticism, he'll make a ton of plays.
London Fletcher. Good show, Steve. Thanks for your participation today. Did you enjoy it?
Always happy to be here for you, Murph.
Good.
Yeah.
And a good show coming up tomorrow. Tre'Davious White will join us tomorrow. Matt Bowen, former Bills safety, talk about some of the stuff he's been writing about the draft, et cetera. And Thurman Thomas is part of our show tomorrow as well. So make sure you check back with us tomorrow at noon. Our production assistants today from George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rood, J.J. Torito, Kevin Cargis, and James Roble, our producer, Jay Harris. Steve and I are here tomorrow, 12 noon, with another installment of One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.